Hello, and welcome to episode 259 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the Instagram comic Black, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And did you know, Dan, that when Eric eats a banana, he becomes Tony Esmond?
Hey! You made me a veggie burger yesterday, and we sat in your garden.
Yeah, I didn't make it, I cooked it.
Well, cooked it, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't ever got my cupcake. Mrs. Hunt had a cupcake for me, didn't she? She never gave it to me then.
Well, because you disappeared like a fart in the wind.
Oh, I know, but we'd been there a while.
Yeah.
And to be fair, as soon as I drove off, do you notice it started pouring with rain?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. As we Should speak, you, folks.
Tell them what happened.
Yeah. So we FaceTimed. The guns FaceTimed. We used technology to bring the three of us together. Three became one. It was Vincenzo's 40th birthday celebrations, and I brought along him a couple of presents. Yeah, went all right, didn't it? Then we went for a trek through the woods.
Yeah. Which isn't as sinister as it sounds, folks. It was a lovely day, so we just went for a walk.
I thought it was funny to say hilarious things to people we walked past.
Yep. We put the world to rights. And it was just nice. And I was going to mention it in the shout outs, but I just want to say a big thank you to anyone that. Because when you're on social media, all of a sudden the amount of people that say happy birthday to you multiplies.
Gets lost.
A lot. Yeah. And I couldn't reply to everyone individually, so I did a stupid video. But if you did say something, thank you very much. I was very moved by it all. And it was lovely. And you're all awesome. So, yeah, thank you. It was a real nice day. I mean, it's been sunny for the past, two or three months since, obviously, this pandemic nonsense. And on my birthday, it rained nonstop.
God, fucking kicked it down. it was quite sunny for our little walk. We went for a long walk. What did we go for, a 45-minute walk or something? Yeah. It's quite sunny for that, isn't it?
Yeah. But fortunately, I got gifted a few books and things. So I was quite happy staying indoors. And plus, like all of us, and no doubt a lot of you people out there, most comics people in general, we have been training to stay inside most of our lives. So I was more than happy. And a couple of things that I read, I'm going to talk about later on in the show. So I can't wait. So, yeah, thank you to everyone for their generosity, including these bastards on this show who rendered me speechless with a little gift. Thank you very much for delivering a piece of art, which is literally within our
already framed. By the time I drove away, it was framed.
Yep. And the way I've got frames up in my studio, I've got it so I can mix and match sometimes. You know, it's not. So I just replaced a couple of bits and one of my first. I've got a couple of bits of original art, but a page of Chris Wild Goose porcelain is something to be treasured.
He hasn't sold many of them.
And Chris, I know you said on Twitter that they're very close to your heart, so thank you for parting with this, and I love it, and I love you, but with the power of 1,000 suns. And thank you for making the day lovely. It was
no problem at all.
Pleasure, mate.
But enough about me. You talk about me.
What?
Yes. So, as you can tell, we don't have a guest this week. Again, we've had a couple of weeks of
We don't need guests.
Yeah. I mean, some weeks we do.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because we get tired of talking
when it gets
each other.
When it gets out of hand.
No. And we've got some great guests lined up for the next few weeks, but we're having another Three Amigos show. And Dan Butcher asked the masses for a few more questions, and boy, did they deliver again. We'll answer a few questions later on. Once again, the statement must be said, we're in no way, shape or form any kind of authority on anything or expert. This is purely our nonsensical
with
views.
Opposite of experts, I'd say.
Yeah.
Sort of the opposite.
What is the opposite of an expert?
Idiots.
That's it. We're just idiots.
It's a wise person to learn by other's mistakes, so look on us.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do as we do. Yeah. There was something else to that. So I'm sure there's some sort of line in there somewhere. Before we get on to that, we have to mention our lovely sponsor, Comic House, who are sticking with us. and do have some exciting stuff lined up. And if you don't know about it, but before I mention that, Comic House is, of course, the indie marketplace with a difference. The difference being that they can put up with these ads on a weekly basis, which is brilliant, and God bless them. But also, on comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database. And if you self-publish, you can list your book on there for free. Start selling like hard copies. It's another avenue for you to get selling your books. I know some people have recently started adding their books on their stores and stuff. But they also have an app, which is just amazing. We love it. We read it. And we shill it every week because it is awesome and you need to be reading it if you haven't yet.
Yeah.
And if you haven't tried digital comics yet, then you know, this is the perfect way to do it, because it's only £3 a month and you get an access to an enormous library of amazing digital indie comics. For instance, what stuff is there on at the moment, Dan?
There's absolutely reams. Apart from the great news we had of the comic series Teddy Boy, which is the...
I read the first issue of that today.
Okay. What do you think?
It's fucking mental.
Ah, excellent.
It looks amazing. It looks really good. Like those comics I used to read in the, you know, in your teens that were just sort of Chinese imports. It was just like crazy. Yeah. The translation on it is just incredibly bad.
Oh, okay. It might have been done overseas.
Yeah, it looks like it's been done with Google Translate. You can make it out anywhere. I've only read the first issue, so it might improve, but it's you can tell what's going on. Quite a lot of sex in it as well, which is good.
Awesome. I'm there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we got a Slaughterhouse Farm for Bride of Pigfucker.
That's a title for you.
Yeah. Juxtaposed to that, we've got a Hopper Detected of the Strange issue 2. Case of the Manium.
That's for the kids.
Yes, that's for the kids. We've got Ash Asherman Special Edition Volume 1. We've got Little Spark 1 from Fair Spark Books. Yeah. We've got Stan and Jack Issue 1 and Issue 2.
That's good. We reviewed that a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, nice one. And we've got Sam Webster's Autism Anxiety Volume 1. And I've been had a chance to see some of these pages in work as they've been done, and they look really good. Yeah. So check that one.
Well, I've not seen that one, actually. Is that up on the app already? I hadn't seen that.
Yes, yeah, so this is that new thing of it's on the app, but it doesn't show straight away. So if you look for it there, then it refreshes. So it's in there. But I'm not going to all these on there now.
If you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff being added all the time. the other news is that there's a Comic House Kids section within the app, which is going to be coming soon, where basically readers can set up a PIN number so for their adult account. And so, you know, if you've got a Comic House account and you want to give it to your kids to read their, you know, the books that aren't absolute filth, like anything created by us.
Yes, true.
Yes, you can set up a PIN number for the adult stuff, and the kids can access all of the family stuff. But Comic House are on the lookout for more content and family friendly content as well. I know we joke about like all the like adult comics on there as well, but seriously, you know, it'll keep your kids quiet for ages if you just give them a whole load of comics to read on the app. It'd be brilliant as well. So yeah, so if you've got all ages books out there, maybe it's just an old collection you had from ages ago, seriously sign up to Comic House and add it there, because
it the Spark's on there, isn't it?
Spark's on there.
Spark 3's going to print this week. Here we go.
Yeah,
brilliant.
And we're talking more about all ages and kids books more and more, probably this year so far, more than any year previously. So yeah,
reading that Pat Mills interview, that kind of brought it home to me. He said it before, but it kind of struck a chord with me, like the people have read these comics when they were younger and they've grown up and then but not told the stories to the kids anymore. They're telling them to each other, and
yeah,
people not writing those comics for like the younger, like the eight to the 15s. And I was like, that's kind of a bit there are people that are doing it. I don't want to say they're not, but yeah, that's certainly the case for me.
Yeah, there's that weird area now, isn't it, where comics are written for mostly adults, but sometimes comics are written in a child friendly style but for adults.
Yeah,
which is also a weird little area, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, certainly an interesting time. It's always interesting times on this show. But yes, so check out comichouse.com if you want to just read some amazing comics in the app itself. If you go to comichouse.com, there's a 14-day free trial, and with the code Stay Safe, which you should all be doing anyway, so it's easy to remember, you get an extra month free as well on top of that. So yeah, comichouse.com. God bless them. We love them, and they put up with us.
Mm.
So there you go. We almost started another conversation about all ages books then.
Yeah, we've got one of those coming soon, haven't we?
Yeah. And there'll be more talk about kids' comics and stuff in the future. So we've got some exciting guests lined up for such topics. But we shall say no more. But they are all fresh voices to this show, which is what we love, including some people that we talked about before the show. Should have been on here a long time
ago. Yeah. Really. It's funny, isn't it? Because we meet them at conventions and stuff. We kind of thought he must have been on, and he ain't.
No. So
got sorry, really just... shit memories as well.
But
that saying about like malice or just incompetence is usually incompetence when it comes to us.
Yeah.
Not in any way malice.
We're too busy just caring about comics and reading comics and trying to make comics and stuff, so we forget all the other day to day.
We've had a pretty productive day today, haven't we?
We have, yeah. This week, I was there with the Pritt stick and the glue and putting pages together, in a digital sense, of course,
Doug Church style,
yeah. But, Tony, you've got a new project that is almost at the finish line now, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's the digital copy is just being proofread by Claire Hemsworth. So I'm hoping it's back tomorrow. Then it's off to print with Tony Osmond. So there's one
review. Have you
properly
talked about this yet? I know. I know the name has been mentioned on the show a few times, hasn't it, Dan? We've certainly talked about it, but some of our listeners may not. I don't think we've necessarily discussed what the book is. And considering an impending release is just around the corner.
Yeah, I want to be careful about it because I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
Because there's something, the whole swings on one thing. No, that's not true. There's a twist in it that's, you know, we build up something and then you. So I don't want to overly, but it's
essentially, without giving anything away, an interview with a fictional movie star, isn't it?
That's kind of it.
And
yeah.
this person's okay. career. There is like back matter that basically evolves that, doesn't it? Yeah.
Saucy back matter from some guest artists, you two, and two other people. It was designed. Do you remember when we were going to do a summer special? Do you remember a year ago? I kept saying, let's do a summer special.
Yeah.
And we never got around to it because we're all sort of so busy. And I'd already, because I'm the one who sort of lags behind because I have to get an artist on board, I have to, you know, get off to them. I sort of started
lags behind. Up. Have you seen how much she's put out recently, Dan? He cannot say that anymore, can he? He can officially never say that again.
the thing is, I can't. If, say, for example, you needed a comic for Monday. You too, if you didn't sleep, could do a 2-page comic, couldn't you? But me, I'm fucked. I'm like, no, there's no chance. So I got an artist on board, Mr. Cumber, and we started writing it. And it started off as I can't remember how many pages now. 8 pages or something?
I think it was 8 pages, wasn't it? Because when
it sort of grew.
We initially sorted out the special. It was like, right, we'll either do an 8-10 page one each or something like that, wasn't it?
Then it grew, and then we thought we'd add an epilogue to it, and then we put some back matter in, and it got its own sort of theory about, you know, sort of thing about what it is. And I was going to kickstart it, and I thought, I've just done a Kickstarter. Well, to be fair, I'm in the middle of one because we're doing the Spark one as well. Mm. So I've got the money. I'm just going to get it printed. So yeah, so Vince is designing it, and it's with proofreader.
There's not much design to do. If you've got fantastic art and you've just got to stick it together,
nice cover from Cliff. Really pleased with that. Out from Tribute Press. So I'm looking at getting it to Mixum, hopefully by Wednesday.
Do you want to put a date on it? Because I know, like...
Yes, I don't know how long they'll take to print it. That's the problem. I mean, to be fair, I'm thinking about putting it out digitally first anyway.
Okay.
So watch this space. It might be Wednesday.
Wow.
And then when the print copies come out, I'll put that on a pre-order. But yeah, we'll see. Yeah, it's nice not to be rush, Kickstarter with something, you know?
Mm.
It's kind of, I kind of like that.
Mm. How have you found the process of the Tony Osmond book? Then the name is purely coincidental.
I just found it fairly organic, actually. I just came up with the idea, you know, one dark evening, thinking, fucking hell, what about this? And it sort of occurred to me, and Cliff's totally on board. And Cliff and I, we didn't rush it, we just enjoyed it, and which is the good thing. The thing with not having a date on it and not having a Kickstarter attached is quite nice, just to sort of let it grow organically.
Yeah.
It had another name to start with, and it's still the title of the story, but we decided to call it something else. There's a guest appearance in it. Not giving anything away. It's a guest appearance of someone.
It does feel like, you know, because of the title of the... It feels like there's a title of the series, but then you can have those subtitles if you do other stories again. Do you know what I mean? It feels like this is the name of this story, even though it's essentially a one-shot kind of thing.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. I'm so enthused by the reception. Cliff hasn't heard me say this yet, but I'm thinking about saying to Cliff, let's go another issue. Cliff's a joy to work with. I highly recommend anyone. And to be fair, since his work on Space Warp and this, I've had at least three inquiries saying, oh, you know, what's his page rate? You know, obviously I lie and say it's £300 a page. So he's definitely going somewhere.
He's also one of history's great sexual dynamos, but
he is. Yeah.
So it's really hard to work with as well.
Yeah,
he's constantly drinking and swearing.
He's an absolute monster.
He's a monster.
When Lebner is, he's like the politest man, the nicest man. So, although he does like shouting prozzies at lorry drivers, which doesn't mean. And a great style. Wait till you see it, man. He's so good. The 11 o'clock comics reviewed Atomic Hercules, and Jason Wood, who's a friend of mine, said, look, this is basically Tony. it kind of is, in a way. This is kind of another element of that again. I sort of just angry me again, you know. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes down. To be fair, I sent it to someone, Pal, today, and I said, you know, here you go. And he said, do you want notes on it? I said, I love you, but I don't care what you think. You know what I mean? I don't care what people think about it. I liked it. I enjoy it. I think it's good. And me and Cliff think it's good. And Ken thought it was good when he let it. And that's enough for me, guys. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not fussed. The tastes of the comic buying industry, the comic buying public these days seems to be a bit fucking off to me. So I don't really care.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff which, like, we were kind of bemoaning, weren't we, Vince, with swing it around to the bad news.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah,
Out of Darkness got fucking canned. The fucking shit out there is really frustrating.
But here's what I'll say to you guys: it's been cancelled, right? You had a beautiful two trades, was it?
To be fair, the Chew Out of Darkness, which is the final Out of Darkness that we're going to
now,
get for the fourth.
Yeah, at the moment
is the final part of it. So, there's three tales in total.
But here's what I'll say to you. Right? My favourite series, as everyone knows, Master Kung Fu, ended after 110 issues, okay? I don't want any more of it.
No.
Because that's a beautiful moment in my comic reading life, and it's been ruined by the shite they brought out since.
Yeah.
So, to be fair, you got a lovely, three trades?
I got three trades of my favourite series for a very, very long time. And I don't know.
And if they water it down, or it goes to someone else, or there's a break in it, and you get like a 3-year break and it comes back, is it going to feel the same? No, you're going to hark back to that moment, aren't you?
I really liked it. Layman was talking about, like, obviously when he worked with Skybound on it and stuff, it was always planned as a 6-trade, you know, it's been plotted out. The whole thing was set for 6 trades, essentially, which isn't the world. Which, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, maybe when it comes to comic sales, you might be asking a bit much.
That's like half a year, isn't it? A trade, say 6 issues.
Yeah,
I don't know how many they appear in a trade.
Yeah, so you're probably talking like over 3 or 4 years, probably. You know, you could do that. So knowing, and anyone who's read that series will know that. Yes, it kind of ends, but it ends in a way that you just wanted more of it. That was one of the reasons I loved it. It was like...
Oh. Yeah, it was like a continuing story, and you thought, well, where's this going?
Yeah. And, I mean, from a fan, you know, I'm not someone who's going to go online and shout and scream and, you know, troll people because you're an idiot if you do stuff like
There's a lot of people that do that, Vince, so don't worry. On
Twitter?
The tweet books.
I've heard about that.
And also, from a sort of comic buyers or comic fans, perspective in terms of if you understand, not un- I don't understand the business. We clearly don't understand the business because we're making whatever fucking comics we want, and but
yeah, and not earning any money out of it.
Yeah, not earning any money, but knowing how the comic book marketplace is a difficult place to get an ongoing. Anyway, so I can see maybe why the reasons are, and quite rightfully so. Layman and the creative team, they haven't come out and said anything about it. It's all very private, because it is private. These sort of things are private. The business deals and the contracts and who, what, when, where and how should always be private. You don't need to put all that online, because then you're just inviting a whole heap of trouble. So I understand that, yes, maybe the numbers didn't add up, but from a fan's perspective, but I can only talk from someone who's, it's almost, I haven't had this experience for many, many years of having a favourite comic book and it's just taken away. Do you know what I mean? Even though I understand on some levels, and like you say, Tony, yes, I'm grateful for what I've got, because I will reread those all the time. But there is sense of like, oh, just...
Say, for example, in 2 or 3 years' time, you hear it's coming back.
Yeah.
Doesn't a little bit of you... Expectation is a lot, isn't it, these days? Have we built it up too much? Do we really need to go back and touch it? I don't know.
In some ways, I would liken it to Deadwood.
Yeah, which is successful when it came back, I think. Yeah,
exactly. So,
but I was nervous about it.
Yeah, you totally would be.
I can understand that, because when the creator comes back, they're not in the same frame of mind as they were when they originally created it.
Yeah.
And they may just take it off on some wild tangent because they've changed.
Yeah.
Since the years that they last did the comic.
I can totally understand that. For instance, at the moment, I couldn't make a Red Mask from Mars comic if I tried.
Okay.
I mean, yes, you could say, oh, yes, you could. Well, yeah, I could, but would I be happy with it? Would it be the same sort of experience that you get with the other issues? No, it wouldn't. And that's why I'm not doing it, because if it doesn't feel the same, and you shouldn't push the creative process.
If you don't feel like it's going to come out like you want it to, right? Just like, it's better to walk away, like, that's done.
Yeah.
Let's move onwards and upwards.
And
certainly... what's that quote from David Lynch, isn't it? People change depending on who they are, where they are, and what time it is.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of, the mood, is, you know, moods are for cattle, isn't it? Isn't that the June phrase? But the mood doesn't take you, treat you in the same way.
Yeah.
We're in a groove creatively when we're doing stuff, you know, and when it comes back, it's not always the same.
Yeah.
And it can be. But you're taking a big gamble, and do we really want our hearts broken again by having to watch some nonsense Master of Kung Fu issue 126 come out, you know, 30 years later, which is just awful. Yeah.
Which, you know, my hope is, well, you know, I hope if all the creators involved are all fine, they understand, and they go off and do their other things, you know, and it just naturally, that's, you know, I just wish the best for everyone involved in this comic, because it was brilliant.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
From a fan's perspective, there's the natural, why don't you get, I don't know, you could get Aftershock to do it. You could get all these other publishers to do it. You could kickstart it. You know, all of those are going through my head. But that may not, you know, certainly these there may be contracts the creators just may not want to.
Yeah, it depends what.
There's loads of things. So I can only speak from, I lost my favourite comic and I'm not happy about it.
They might be in talks right now. They might be talking about where they're going to take it to, or don't know what the rights issues are or anything.
Yeah,
it's frustrating, because during the week I was talking to one of the people I work with and saying, oh, this fucking comic's great. And she's saying, oh, thanks for the trades. You know when the next one's coming out?
Mm.
I said, I don't know. She went, I don't usually go in on comic series I haven't completed, because I don't like being the rug pulled
out. Yeah, that's a good point, man.
And 2 days later, it fucking
they fucking did it. I mean, this is a book that certainly I was a dealer for. You know, I went past the point of just being a fan. Yeah, I was a dealer.
Yeah.
And
who bought it for me? One of you? Was it you, D? Bought
it's it
for
me,
yeah. I really liked it. And to be fair, it's not the sort of thing I'd have thought of picking up, to be fair.
Yeah, I was unsure whether he was going to like it or not. And I think
I liked
the
attitude,
didn't you?
And it was a great series. So, you know, it's a shame. But, like I say, live on home. I mean, obviously, we've got no inside information. There's absolutely nothing. This is all theoretical. I would, if I was to say, they wouldn't be able to take it to another publisher, because it's through Skybound, and I know Skybound is obviously a Kirkman thing, and a lot of, this is what I think in my head, theoretical, I would have thought with the Skybound properties, there's a lot of things in place, should they go to other media, should they become series, should they become games, do you know what I mean? Skybound is not just comics. There, you know, so there may be things that are tied in Out of Darkness to that publisher, which means it can't go somewhere else. If that's the case, I understand. It's just a bloody shame.
It's a shame.
Yeah. Are there any other series you can think of in the past that should not be picked up again? Because I mean, you can think this. So I was just trying to think of it there, and I was trying to think of comic series you two guys like, and it suddenly occurred to me, like, if they went to bring the NAM back these days, would you want them to?
No.
I don't think anyone's got it in them.
I don't want any more of.
Yeah. Did the NAM properly finish?
There must be some. I was just thinking, I wondered that, but there must be some.
Like within one of my favorite series, Invincible, I don't want to see any more Invincible ends. There's an ending to it, and I don't want any more of that.
Scout is the same for me. Vertigo is a prime example of that, isn't it? There's a lot of books. Northlanders, I don't want them coming back. I think you're done, guys. Yeah. 100 Bullets. We don't need 100
Preacher.
Bullets.
Okay. We don't want another Preacher story. Yeah. Yeah. You know,
there is a lot, they finish the story and then they revisit and it detracts from the original.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It hurts, I think, sometimes.
I think if you're gonna sort of add more to the universe, I think the only way that you could do it, in my opinion, is to do a spin-off series that would be alongside the main series. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like the expanded universe. As this
kind of
event,
Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Yeah, like as this event happened, you remember reading this scene in Preacher? And if you wonder what happened to that person while they were off this scene, this is what happened to them. Do you know what I mean? I think the Boys did a similar sort of thing, didn't it? I think they did like Wee Huey and stuff like that. I think they did a couple.
Yeah, but that wasn't that during its run. Anyway, the Boys is back, isn't it? There's a spin-off series. There's a new series. Yeah,
I wonder why
Gary Hill was telling me about it the other day. I must read it. It's I've got a feeling it's the same creative team. I've got a feeling. Yeah, I keep meaning to go and download it. Yeah,
it's got a girl's name in it. I can't remember.
Is it his wife or something? I can't remember. Yeah. Gary will be shouting because he's the one who recommended it to me the other day. But yeah, it does look good. But yeah, there's lots like that.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, of course, then you always have the what's the one series that shouldn't have come back?
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that is exactly what I was going to say.
Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah, fucking hell.
DK2 shouldn't have existed.
I went fucking in on the trade on that and I was just like, this is garbage.
What about Beyond Watchmen?
I've not read any of that.
Yeah.
It
still doesn't appeal.
No. And the thing is, these could be great comics. To be fair, and if you like them, if you like any of the things that we don't like, more power to you. Because like we're no fucking authority on anything. But
unless if you've got no taste, you'd like the Return of the Man Thing series that happened. Yeah. Who's that bloke who wrote Goosebumps, whatever his fucking name is?
Stein.
He wrote it, didn't he? It's terrible. Awful.
Really? Bad.
Yeah. What he did is he walked over into a graveyard and whipped his knob out and pissed on the grave of Steve Gerber just for hours on end. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did that look like in comic book panels?
Well, pick it up yourself in a book.
There you go.
Was it like that, you know that Sherlin, what was that Sherlin Cowboy, that the issue that I've always mentioned, that's one fight scene for an entire issue? From pissing in comics and being pissed off about comics. No, not really, we love them. Should we answer a couple of questions? Because we've got a couple more questions.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, what ones are we going to do?
Because I have a feeling that the conversation is going to go far and wide based on
what
people
have. We've got two reviews this week each, haven't we, as well? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a rant about my one. It's not a comic.
That's right. Yeah.
Let me sharpen my fucking knife up for that.
Brazzers again?
Yeah.
Right. Phil McFarlane does know what Brazzers mean. That's all I'm saying.
It's not Tony saying browsers.
I don't know. Should we do this? Is far off a question and see where we go.
Yeah. Okay.
Should I do a question?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, you're the question master.
You're in charge of questions.
Yeah, is it Magnusson? Is that what it is?
Magnus Danielson or something.
Yeah, Daniel Danielson.
Gundus Gunderson.
Yes.
We talked briefly before we came on what we'd like to. Questions we'd like to tackle. This is one of them from Jennifer Wheeler. If you could have one of your comics translated into a different medium, for example, a music album, one-man play, series of dioramas, which comic you want adapted and what medium would you want it adapted into?
Series of dioramas.
Yeah.
Oh.
Rock opera.
Yes.
They obviously they did Usagi Yojimbo was translated as a
that's
stage
a great play.
Play.
I love that play. Yeah, yeah.
I missed out on that.
That's good, actually. I was like, well, I got a freebie. A reviewer's one for that. That's good stuff.
Nice.
The I've got one. The Whore Chronicles, right, as a Radio 4 play.
Yeah.
Like that, a talking heads.
Yeah, I was about to say, it'd probably come across like an audio book of that World War Z, you know, the actual book of World War Z, which was all interviews and stuff like that. Not the film. Not the film. But yeah, I think that would be...
That'd really work.
I quite like that idea. Yeah, and get some actresses in with the right sort of voice. Yeah.
I think some audio versions of some comics would be great.
It's quite a lot of them. I like them. Yeah. You know, there's a couple of Judge Dredd ones. Well, no, there's more than a couple of them. There's about 20 Judge Dredd ones, aren't there?
Get
Big
the right
Finish has done
talent.
Quite a few. Yeah. 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 And I thought you plays Johnny Alpha in them.
Who?
Yeah.
Diamond Peg.
Really?
Yeah.
How does he do the voice? He does that
not very well. Not
he does that gravelly voice of his.
Yeah, it's not very good. He doesn't come across as tough, does he? Even in his voice. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's funny, like in the films, when he acts tough and it's funny because you know he's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's
hard to take it straight.
Yeah.
I would love to see Viper as like a straight like TV show that you'd see on in the 80s on Saturday, like 5, 6 o'clock in the evening.
I think Viper
montage intro.
Personally, I think Viper would be a brilliant sort of video game that's part like, you know, car GTA type car, part like Max Payne jumping around and shooting guns. Do you know what I mean?
If you mix the two,
I think Murder Road would be the one.
Oh, you can't say that, because before we even met, I described Red Mask as a Saturday morning cartoon series.
Yeah, I mean, go-to is, and that's how I've sold it to people in the past, the Red Mask from Mars is a cartoon series. That's job done. That's what it need to be. Or video games or things like that, that'd be cool. I mean, I don't imagine live action when I think of something like that. I think Murder Road's a bit of a trickier one. I think obviously people... You know, cause...
Almost Murder Road, I'd like to see as like a black and white Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, that'd work.
That's how I'd like to see it.
See, I wouldn't necessarily say the black and white. Yeah, I would.
I don't like the Twilight Zone in color. Perhaps where I'm. That's why I said that.
I think because it's so entrenched in like. I mean, the comics obviously black and white, but if it were, you know, it's like an 80s VHS.
I think like heavily desaturated with like green tones something.
I'd watch that if Cronenberg or even Lynch or someone directed it. Yeah. I'd watch that, mate. That'd fucking disturb the fuck out of me. Just with like that buzzing noise, you know, and the silence of the road and stuff. And a beautiful
synthwave soundtrack. Ooh, But, you know, there will be a collection of that in the future. So
yeah. I can't really say what I want to say about Tony Osmond because it actually takes place there. Yeah. So,
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Interesting. Right. So we've got another question from Gary from Comics Anonymous. A bit again self-focusing. If you were to swap and do each other's titles, which one would you choose?
I read that one. I still can't make my mind up.
Yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yeah, because they're so individual to us. I see them. Yeah. I see them all with a personality, and I find that's the one that I've been thinking most about. And I can't because I don't think you'd want my obvious like filth on your comic. Do you know what I mean? It's like
it's a tricky one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like if I did Atomic Hercules, for example, or Red Mask Vince, it wouldn't be those comics anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's not coming through you guys.
Which shows
a tricky one, that.
Maybe a rearrange. If it was reimagined, I think that would be a good shout for me, actually, man. I think to see you take on Atomic Hercules, I think I'd like that.
I think it brings up the idea of, like, you know, whether you ask for the reimagining, whether you ask for an artist's version of it, or you treat them like, you know, a Marvel or DC, you know, here's the character, just write a story for this, because that's a very different kettle of fish, isn't it? When you're given something, you have to work within the parameters of it, which goes to show how difficult that can be. Certainly when we see all these writers going, God, bloody hell, you know, Jason Aaron's done this brilliant thing on Thor. But, you know, you see the other things he's done with Scalped and, you know, Southern Bastards and stuff, and that sounds nothing like Thor. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, he's got the ability. He's one of the few writers at Marvel who's got the ability to write in different ways, isn't he?
Yeah.
You should do that writing experiment maybe within the Awesome Comics chat group where someone approaches you with a title and says, right, we want this. You want a 6-episode pitch.
Yeah.
That'd be nice, actually. If someone's willing to put their head on the block in the group and they say, right, I want a 1-page comic about my, you know, a script for a 1-page comic about my character, whoever it's going to be, Skelly Bob, £5.
Yeah.
Or whoever it's going to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then that would be nice. I think that's a great idea, man. Yeah.
Because I think that's also because it's interesting when you want someone else's version of your character. For instance, when, back to The Dark Knight again, when Frank Miller did The Dark Knight, they didn't say, could you do a book that's just like the other ones that are coming out? It was Frank Miller's version of Batman.
I think it's brave of some creators to relinquish their control over a character. It's something I'm not comfortable with, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because sometimes I've seen, you know, you do see people's take on things and you think, that's fantastic. That's not how I do it.
Yeah, and it's a weird one. But there's some creators who I really admire who don't mind that. So even Bob Dylan doesn't mind other people covering his songs. Mm. And you look at the cut, you know, I don't think, I've got a feeling he doesn't charge them as well. But there's a lot of that going on. And also Michael Moorcock, his Eternal Champion books, he said, look, if you want to write something. You know, he's quite happy with that. Mm. It's a strange one. I think we live too much in the world of copyright and trademark these days, don't we, that everyone's a bit paranoid about doing it. But let's face it, none of us are making money, so it don't really apply to us.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I think it would be interesting. Here's an experiment. What do you think of this idea? We have ideas for all kinds every week on this show. But just say, all three of us, we come together and we create one character. Whatever this character may be, but all we'll give you is, here's the name of the character, here's what they look like, here's a synopsis of them. And then people can go away and create their own version of whatever they think that this thing is. What would we get? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it'd be interesting because we'd get some great stuff, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
I'll tell you what, I've got a couple of prizes here. Do you want to have a competition, D?
I've got an idea.
Go on, man.
Do we need to talk about it off air, or do you want to talk about it now?
No, it's freewheeling, babe.
Two-part Awesome Comics Talk competition. We'll come up, the three of us will come up with a character, an idea, design, and say, right, here's the brief for the character. The artist folks among us can come up with the costume design or whatever the character design, and then we'll give the writing side over to the writers and say, right, we want you to come up with an idea for this character, write a crazy story or whatever, and then we pick the winner out of that. So you get an artist prize and a writer's prize.
Yeah, okay. Do you want to make it like one page? Then it's not too cumbersome.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah. I've got a load of comics here, and I'll donate a couple of NoBrad books as well. There you go.
We're ironing out the intricacies on off air.
Right.
But, yeah. Do we want a page, or do we just want to make it a cover?
Oh, a cover's good. Cover, like that. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So the writer can sort of say, well, you know, here's the synopsis of the book.
This is the backstory of the character. This is what happens in it. Do a cover from that. Yeah. I like that.
Nice one.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. And then we'll put it up to a vote. Whoever the vote. We'll go to the community.
Yeah.
You want to do that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. So now we've got to go away and figure out how we're going to do this.
Yeah, we won't do it maybe so much on artistic talent, but the ideas inherent.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly the point. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Make it crazy as you like.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
So, things you think of in lockdown, eh?
Mm-hmm. I know.
We've got another thing coming up this Friday.
I'm literally excited about this. I can't wait for this.
You're taking all my shout outs away from me, Dan. How dare you?
Just ticking boxes.
Yeah,
as we go.
Yeah, well, that's all right. It means I've got nothing to do later in the show, and I can just sit back and listen to you two. We talked about this crazy madcap idea about doing a drink and draw. That we're going to sort out, and certainly on the Awesome Comics Talk group, Tom Curry took the ball and ran with it.
Yeah, good lad.
Massively. So we want to give a shout out to that. So as he said here, hello all. It was mentioned on the last pod and thought let's give it a whirl. With that in mind, the details are as follows. Now, this is a drink and draw. Awesome pod. Online. It's a Zoom meeting. Everyone just go join in and then just do some drawing for however long you can make it. The date is this. It's the 26th of June, which is this Friday.
Friday, isn't it? Yeah, Friday.
This Friday, if you're listening to it week on week, if this is fresh. The time will be 7:30 p.m. There is a link in the Awesome Comics Talk group with the ID and the password. You know, if you do Zoom chats, I know Zoom is now more popular than ever at the moment, isn't it? Mm. So,
yeah.
You know.
And he's got a pro version, isn't he? So yeah, he's got a pro version and stuff. Yeah.
However, if you can't make that one, or, you know, because there'll probably be a few people that join in on this, and you want to have your own drink and draw, the 26th of June, whenever you can do it, get together with a few friends. You can do it on Zoom, you can do it on Skype, however you want to do it. Just get the webcams up, just have a laugh with some friends and do some drawing. And we're going to post a thread on the Awesome Comics Talk group, and we'll probably have one on the Twitter as well, won't we, when we showcase this. So you can post your artwork up there, and then we'll be sharing that on Twitter, etc. It's just, you know, it's just
and it is a drink and draw, and I shall be drinking, so people need to be worried.
Drinking heavily.
I will be drinking probably a cup of tea.
I bought beer in for it. I very rarely have booze in the house, obviously, because of the past issues.
Was it ginger beer?
Yeah, we can get alcoholic ginger beer. That's quite nice. Have you had that?
I know. No, I've had that. Yeah,
it's all right. Yeah, yeah. Mm. So I've got booze in the house now, so I'm just going to be drinking the house dry and sitting there watching you lot drawing. I might do
this. No. You've got to take part.
Oh, yeah, I'll take part. Yeah. Draw around.
I'm going to be doing some my patron drawings.
Oh, good idea.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was a fun little idea. And thank you, Tom, for taking the initiative, because we're terribly we're unorganized on this show, and he got around to doing it. But actually, I was thinking about putting a post up, and then he had done it like 2 days before I managed to do it. So, you know, it's our
listeners. You'd miss it. I think you said, I'm going to put a post up about it. I think he'd done it, didn't he?
Yeah. And I was like, shit.
Because Sarah Harris was really kind of interested in getting one done, and then was like, oh shit, we better do it. And then it was like, yeah, so we're up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be it's kind of the small replacement for not going to a convention.
Yeah.
Isn't it, really?
Yep. And, you know.
Speaking of conventions.
Hang on. We'll get onto this in a second.
It's this thing of like the not remembering everything that's happened in the week. Cause it's quite a lot.
Yeah, now it's all coming back. Before we get onto that, and if you think, oh, drink and draw, oh, I can't draw, doesn't matter. You just turn up to have a laugh. So we hope to see you there and to see your work. So give that a bash.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing everyone's backgrounds as well. That's always fun.
But as Dan mentioned, speaking of conventions.
Yes.
TV.
Inevitable news came in. Thought Bubble has been postponed until 2021, although there is a digital convention that's happening that weekend, isn't there? The 14th and 15th, I believe.
I think details to follow on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is this the only sensible choice they could have made?
Yeah. God bless them. I sent Chloe, who's obviously our friend, I sent Chloe just a best wishes around it, and everyone understands completely and utterly. I know it's a big gutting for them, but
and it's the best decision to make, really, I think, with the uncertainty of everything. And you know, it's all about every convention or organizer of any event, it's got to think about the people that are going to be at the show first and foremost. So we hope none of you are too put out. I know it's just, look, at the end of the day, it's a shame we're not going to have any conventions to go to. But I tell you what, we've got loads of time to do art. We've got loads of time to make... look, Thought Bubble...
Read comics.
If you thought Thought Bubble was a launching platform normally, next year, everyone's going to have every book that they've done this year that they'll launch in next year's Thought Bubble. There's more comics than ever. And there's, you know, and the indie scene's marvellous with, like, still churning out books. So, it's a shame.
I'm thinking of doing a standalone for Thought Bubble next year, because I thought I don't have time to get it done this year, but I think I'll be able to get it done for next.
Yeah, yeah. Because Dan Butcher was going to be there. He was going
to
be
there. I was going to be there. I was really looking forward to it, man. We had fucking hotels booked.
Yeah, me too. Guess who booked their hotel without a cancellation thing on it? Oh, that would be me.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, well. I'll fill in the questionnaire about it being due to COVID, but we'll see what happens.
You could
just go up there with the missus. Go, why are we going here? Just fun.
No, I want to enjoy myself. It's like, yeah.
Well, you never know. Betty's might be open at that point.
Yeah. I don't think we're allowed back, are we? Since I claimed I played the guitar in there. No, I played the piano in there.
Played the piano. I did have a lovely
Where have you been? I've been playing the piano downstairs.
Yeah. And like Tony and Adam Falp are just previewing pages of absolute filth while there's it's brilliant filth if you've read Atomic Hercules, but
thank you. That was pre Atomic Hercules, wasn't it?
It was the first issue I got images of, I think.
Okay, cool, nice.
I swing us back round to the questions. I've got an interesting one here from Alan Henderson.
Oh yeah,
does brand matter in small press comics, and if so, what good stroke bad examples are there out there?
Yeah, I mean, there's no secret that we sell. I know this is something I've seen online a couple of times in the last week. There's no secret that we all sell our comics to the people we know in the small press.
Yeah. Mm.
When you get someone from the outside, as long as they're not a friend of yours or a relative, it's sometimes quite a surprise, isn't it?
It's a fucking massive slam dunk.
Yeah. So having that presence, I don't know whether it's a brand or not, maybe it is inevitably in some way important to actually get your money back from your print run or your Kickstarter.
There's does brands that have built up bad stuff around them because of the way they've practiced their business.
Yeah,
I don't particularly want to go naming names, but you probably know the guys I'm talking about. They sort of really out there at cons and sort of really overly aggressive sales tactics, and loads of people talk ill of them.
Yeah,
I've not too much experience with their practices myself, but that seems to be like a byword when anyone talks about them. They're like, oh, it's those guys, and they're very much a brand.
We don't really appreciate the hard sell much in this country, do we?
No.
And it does put me off. I mean, I had that long rant about 2 years ago, didn't I, about somebody's read some bobble-headed idiot who's watched a TED talk about if you put a book in someone's hands, they're going to buy it. And it fucking winds me up when you walk up to a table and there's that game of them trying to get you to take it and you try not to take it, you know.
Yeah.
So, look at it. You hold it open. I'll look at it that way. You know, it's almost that, isn't it? And I think there is pushy sales techniques that really put me off. It's really do.
Yeah. I'm also very cautious of kind of not everything you can read online is what actually is in reality. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like if people badmouth small press creators and businesses online, I can't always take that as gospel. So I always take something with a pinch of salt.
Yeah,
me too.
My take on it is this, and this may sound like a crazy take, and I'll absolutely murder the communication of this and probably get it completely wrong. And I hope you all understand where I'm coming from with this. But if you have a presence online, if you're putting your work out there, even if you're doing it just for yourself and you're printing whatever, your presence is almost your brand.
I mean that
in a sense of like, if you're doing this and with, you know, just say, no matter how many times I've heard, I'm just making these comics for myself. Oh, I wonder if I should pitch to Marvel. We know where you're going.
I'm not the sort of bloke to talk about awards. However,
I don't care about reviews. I care about reviews. Anyway, but if you're putting your stuff out there, there is a certain amount of brand. Now, I don't mean it in like you've got the Nike logo or anything like that. I mean, it's the brand of personality. It is that. Whatever you say, whatever you do, as soon as it's out there in the public, it is also out there for the people you want to work for or you want to get published.
Yeah, we're perceived. It's weird, isn't it? The posts that you create online are perceived by people to be your personality. And we know people who, if you were informed on their personality by how they acted online, you would be frightened of meeting them. Or the chances is you would be hugely annoyed by them. But in reality, some of these people are not like that.
No,
some of them are really nice.
And also, the way some people have acted, you know, sometimes someone's been a dickhead and they've said something stupid 5-8 years ago. And yeah. if you heard them, you know, if you were only just following them for the past 2 years, they seem like the best person in the world. Then when it comes out, and of course the internet gets hold of it, they lose their job. You know, James Gunn with Guardians. If we can use the Guardians of the Galaxy example, you know, he said some stupid stuff on social media. And
he, the difference is he said some stupid stuff as a joke.
As a joke.
Yeah. And
if you take anything anyone says, like especially someone who's trying to make jokes, and you take it out of context and just frame it as like what it is, you can make anyone sound like a fucking monster.
It's like you cannot print sarcasm. I don't think you can.
I know.
Amount of times I've sort of, I will send like sarcastic messages. We do it in our WhatsApp group all the time because we know the person on the other end will read it exactly how they're going to read it. If you send it to someone you don't know, they're just going to read it as it is.
Yeah.
It's that fucking, once again, Twitter, like people to score points on one another. They dug through people's history for years and years and years. Fuck knows who's got the time to do that. But then to find something egregious that they can use against them.
That's why, like, if you're going in this for the long game, or the, you know, if you want to take the professional route, then be a proper bloody professional through and through.
Yeah, I think the problem is that Twitter is the worst for it. Twitter is the worst.
Twitter is the worst.
There is, I mean, you look at some of the people that have been, you know, inverted commas, cancelled, are some of the, probably some of the, in my opinion, in the past, been some of the best meaning people. And everyone, I had a conversation with someone about this, everyone's 5 minutes from being cancelled.
Yeah, Twitter's a fucking mob.
Over someone not liking them, probably for another reason. Yeah.
Twitter's a mob and it's ready to kind of go to war for people. Yeah. Over, all you got to do is kind of shore together some flimsy stuff. And I'm not talking about anything specific or anything that's going on right now, but it's quite easily just getting all riled up and then they just go in on someone and the damage is done. And then it's like, then the truth starts coming out of, was this actually real?
Yeah.
And but I've read that one book and I read it years ago and I recommend anyone who uses social media reads it. Yeah. And it's that John Ronson, So You've Been Socially Shamed.
Yeah, I've got that downloaded for the car, man, actually, for my next long drive. Yeah,
and there's the audio. So many people whose lives have been absolutely destroyed because they made a flippant comment or a joke on social media and someone took it out of context, and then before you know it, they've lost their job, their life, everything.
But we're at the point now where people are being ruined because they follow those people.
Yeah.
Never mind that they've actually been the ones who've sort of accidentally said something stupid, but you're seeing people who are being shamed by... these days for following people, these days for not saying anything about something. I mean, God almighty, what? And, honestly, 1984 was a while ago, chaps. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
That's the trouble. Those kind of themes keep so reoccurring, like in the idea of, like, if you don't walk in lockstep, it means you are... if you're not with us, you're against us. Yeah. It's just... I fucking who I follow on Twitter every fucking minute of the day.
You know, and I sometimes just do it because I quite like the art. Something. But the thing is, it's... I always see Bendis as the beacon of positivity, where he puts stuff on encouraging and about his work, and then he leaves.
Yeah,
and I think that's kind of where I've got to go with it now.
Yeah, and you just got to go on, say something positive, and then peace out. That's kind of what I
just look at my replies these days. I don't actually look at the stream of messages anymore.
I'll tell you one thing you can do, which is like tweet this only to people. Only people you follow and they follow you can respond.
Yeah, there's a way of sitting there, isn't
there? Yeah.
I've padlocked my account because I'm not interested in what other people think.
Yeah.
I think
many times I said about setting up a Discord channel of just people in the Awesome Comics group. And I thought, we've got the Awesome Comics talk, so we don't really need it.
Yeah, well, I'm on the 11 o'clock comic Slack, and that's good. That's like a sea of positivity. That's of like sharing books and art and stuff, and it's so nice. Yeah.
Good. That's what we need more of, positivity. I think I took us way off topic there. What was the original question again, Dan?
It was Alan Henderson asked, does brand matter in small press comics? And if so, what good stroke bad examples are there out there?
Bad examples. I think you kind of got to set your... It's the same, you've got to set your table, haven't you? And people know what they're getting. And we've done that attribute. You know, people know that we've got that sort of probably not safe for work kind of mucking about homage to old comics thing going on. And that's kind of our brand. That's kind of the idea. Mm. You know, we're a little bit the underground, we're the outlaws sort of thing. And I kind of like the fact that we're that, you know.
I think there's some... I've seen some small press and indie people they've started out with the best intentions of making their stuff like a brand, like a proper publisher.
Yeah.
And it's great, you know, I'm completely all for that, especially from someone from an aesthetic perspective, like, and a design perspective. I like things when they all look like they're part of a whole, if you know what I mean. But a lot of the times, this seems great. 6 months later, these people aren't making comics anymore, or the collaboration has fallen apart. I think one of the best examples of how that's kept going, though, is like Reckless Hero. I think Reckless Hero, you've seen their table, you've seen their comics. I know it started off with art, but they built up the brand that way, and then they were doing comics, and now they've got, you know, there's graphic novels on
the horizon. You've got to come into it organically. It's like it's like how we came to do comics together. And how me and Falpy came to, we were pals long before that, and we were pals before we did a comic. I think you've got to kind of do it. You can't just go, oh, you like comics, I like comics, let's start a company. It often doesn't work.
And another example is Big Punch as well. Very much the same. Like,
yes,
people
true.
Came together and just sort of like, we're on the same page, let's do the same kind of thing. And now, you know, they're still, I mean, Reckless Hero and Big Punch, they're still at shows. They've still got this brand. They, you know, thinking down to the way the table is set out.
Yeah, see, they do. That's an example of doing it right.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And knowing their audience.
Yeah.
They've got that slightly manga-esque aesthetic, haven't they?
Yeah. I kind of messed up because when I initially went on Twitter to promote, it was to promote my comic, Vanguard. And now it's just kind of like, just post stupid shit and promote Vanguard. But if you wanted to like keep your kind of Twitter feed clean and it's just about promoting your stuff, you got to do that. Don't start fucking doing political hot takes or stuff like that. Leave that for your personal account. And this is the personal side. I don't get, my moral compass isn't set by global corporations about what they say about moral issues or what's going on in society. I don't give a shit what Big Mac have got to say, or what McDonald's got to say about like the social political climate. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't look to them for that. It's like, you should look to, you know, people around you, friends and family.
But, he just loves the fillet of fish.
Yeah.
I block them. You know, you get those adverts, so you get a recurring one, don't you? Oh. It's a movie or something. I block them straight away because they seem to come up every fucking five tweets these days.
Yeah. You know, like when companies fucking, they change their logo to the pride flag for a month.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, some of these have got the horrendous treatment of the LGBT community, and they're just like, it's just a show for a month.
Of any community, and, you've got sweatshops and,
I was about to go on an old man rant about something else that had nothing to do with this then, but no.
Sort of keeping that on brand, like, so you kind of like, if you're here to talk about your comic and you just want your brand to be all about talking about the comic, talk about the comic and try not to bleed into it. I think that's hard because a lot of people invest not only in you, but as a creator, they want to know about you and find out what you're doing and blah, blah, blah.
I think brand can come down to the way your stuff looks and the way you display it. Now, this
Definitely a design element to it. That's a big part of it. Yeah. Talking about the...
Like, we'll take Alan Henderson, for instance. Hello, Alan. Obviously, the way his table looks ties into the way his website looks. Do you know what I mean? There's a synchronicity to the way...
I like the way he replies to people. He'll send people a happy birthday and it'll be a penguin strip.
Yeah. It's great.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
And there's a definite thought to what he's doing and how he's doing it. Even that, you know, he's doing humour strips. You know, on the face of it, it's like, oh yeah, there's some funny little jokes. I've forgotten the line that Alan says. He rolls out the same line. Is it funny little strips about funny little penguins or something like that? I think he mentions it on the Thought Bubble special from last year, if you want to check that out. But
be more like Al.
Yeah, and be more like Al. There's a t-shirt.
WWAD.
But certainly, you know, because when you come to Alan's table, And you haven't seen it, it's all fresh, it's all new. You know, having a table next to him and seeing the way he works was fascinating and a great way of doing it, you know, because he knows exactly what he's doing and he knows the value of his brand. And I think that's what it has to be when you're on, especially if you're on these public platforms or as soon as you start selling. That's why we're saying, people, don't just sit there looking miserable on your phone. And like, do stuff like
that's
that.
The Twitter equivalent, sitting there being miserable on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's the same, isn't it? I'm not going to buy shit off you.
And there's some people that have been quite successful. They need to think more about their brand when they're at at comic conventions, because sometimes they're ignorant bastards and they really shouldn't be.
Is that you talking about me?
Yeah.
I didn't think this one was going to cause so much ranting from us.
I know.
But it's because someone mentioned Twitter and everyone was off.
Oh, God. Do we want to do a recommend and then come back to another question between our recommend?
Sure. Yes. Okay.
How's that?
Yeah,
do you want to go first, V? Because I'm looking forward to hearing what you think about this one, because I know you like it and it's something I like.
Okay, yeah, I'll start with this one. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
This is a series I think of. You talked about it one time on a past show.
I think about over a year ago.
I mentioned it.
I'll tell you what, I bought it after New York. I bought it in New York last year.
Yeah. Nice. And you bought the first trade, didn't you?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I've got the second one. I haven't read it yet. No spoilers.
It's published by Aftershock. And it's by Cullen Bunn, Juan Doe, Ryan Hill, Dave Sharp.
Oh, how good is Juan Doe? How good is that? Oh my God.
It's ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculous. This is the book called Dark Ark. And I was gifted from the lovely Joe the collection, the omnibus collection of Ark 1, which is the first 15 issues in a lovely hardcover edition. And it's just the straight up story. Now, those Dark Ark, what's that? Apart from being difficult to say over and over, it is basically. I could read the synopsis, but I'll just say it like I did to Dan Butcher before we got to the show. Most of us, I'm not going to say all because there may be someone that doesn't know the story of Noah, but most of us know the story of Noah and his ark and how he had to get all the animals of Earth on there two by two to save them from the flood. Because God told him to. Well, there's a sorcerer who was told by the great God of Hell himself that for all of those good animals and creatures that need to be saved, all of the monsters and supernatural creatures need to survive as well. So he has to create an ark and save all their lives when the great flood comes. So it's basically an ark full of supernatural and evil creatures. I mean, it's a story set around, obviously, this biblical tale. It doesn't really delve into the biblical side of it too much.
No, it's in a way, it's a bit of a sort of soap opera of demons, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because they've all got different personalities and they're all after each other and there's a politics going amongst them. And it's like a murder mystery at one point, isn't it?
Yeah, it totally is. And this is spectacular through and through. Obviously, it's just a brilliant idea. Oh, yeah, you know, the arc, but it's full of monsters and stuff. But what they brilliantly do in this is it is character studies and it is mystery. And you think, oh, yeah, it's going to be cool, like, having this arc full of, like, you know, you've got vampires, you've got dragons, you know, manticores and things like this. All beautifully rendered by Wando, by the way.
Amazing. And I mean, really ferocious looking, really horrible looking, some of them, aren't they?
Yeah, he's supernaturally good. And there's all kinds of monsters, like things that you probably wouldn't know to look at. So therefore, you've got to go away and read up on them, you know, because they'll all be ancient creatures of some kind. And you think, oh, yeah, this would be cool. But it's not. It's not a cool place to be. They've brilliantly made this boat. Like, if it's like, you know, if you think about, oh, yeah, just get a team of super criminals together, super psychopaths together, that would be cool. No, because they're all horrible, and they're not made to exist with each other in a small space for a long period of time. It builds up the horror and the tension brilliantly, because this sorcerer has essentially a normal family, and the reason he's doing this is to save his family's life and make sure they survive the flood and everything as well. It does involve some pretty twisted sort of details, which is brilliant as well. I mean, like, Cullen is just brilliant at writing this sort of stuff. You know, these sort of details, like the Sixth Gun and Harrow County and things like that. Just, you know, the dude knows how to write the supernatural. But just like, yeah, the sorcerer invited lots of people onto the ship. Why did he need other humans on the ship? Well, the monsters have got to eat something. There's these details of, like, you would think, oh, it's the bad guys versus the good guys. No, it doesn't work like that. Because, like, Satan wants Noah's Ark to survive as well. Because when they both find land, the monsters have got to eat something. So they're going to eat everything that was on the Ark. It's just all those details are cool enough, and then you layer on infighting and like mysteries and like, I mean, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, because for me it's very confined, and you think, oh Christ, this is like really confined, because it's proper Bourne Moraine and you know, there's the seas around them, and then suddenly, no spoilers, the two angels basically land on the wrong arc.
Yeah,
and that's a really great moment. I really thought that was amazingly well thought out, and they think they're on. And they think they're on the actual arc.
Yeah, because when they turn up, they think his daughter's like, oh, the sun's come out, because they've known nothing but storms for months and months, and like the sorcerer just looks up and says, no, that's angels coming down, and the angels aren't like the good guys. Do you know what I mean? Moments of tension are beautifully paced out. The story comes to it. I mean, this arc one, pardon the pun, I know it says that on the dark arc, arc one. I mean, that's a fucking mouthful, isn't it? But this sort of omnibus, I think there is a soft cover of this as well, I think.
Of the omnibus, is it?
I think there might be. I'm not sure. But the first 15 issues is a wonderfully sort of, almost a self-contained story. I know that you said before, when we were off air, that there's another story coming, isn't there?
I get the mailer from them, and there's after the flood or something like that. It's called.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I'm not going to divulge into any spoilers. Tony's got another two trades before he's caught up. So, it is as it says in the book, a sinister tale of biblical proportions, but it just works. I think it taps into that great, you know, that thing we all have that. Everyone likes the stories about the bad guys. We don't know why, but you know, we all like those stories about the villains.
I bought a print from Wando at New York a couple of years ago, and I got it signed and then gave it as my donation to the Nottingham charity auction. And I still think about it most weeks. I think, I wish I hadn't given that away.
Oh, yeah, he's so good, and it's great seeing because the colouring as well is spectacular on this. I just wanted to. Make sure I get this right. The colouring. I think that's Wando as well.
Okay.
I think there's a. Yeah. Yeah, because it just says artist. Yeah. So Ryan Hill and Dave Sharp were the letterers. So Wando's done the colouring as well. And it. There, of course, you've got like back mat. You've got a little bit of back matter. Quite nice, actually, because they've got like some double page spreads where they have the script page, the pencils page, and what it looks like when it's coloured. And they've chosen very different sort of scenes to show that. You know, sometimes when you have those things, and have you ever looked at those pages and just thought, why have they picked this spread? Do you know what I mean? It's like, but these are actually quite good, especially. Oh, Tony, there's one moment. Oh, I can't just fucking read the next book.
Is it in the second? Is it in the second volume? Because I'm going to read that. I've got it in the car for tomorrow.
I think it is in the second. Yes, it is the second volume.
Oh, that's fine.
The second volume is. Epic, absolutely epic. So there's cool bits like that, and I know Aftershock, they are the fans of the variant cover. The variant cover, which is a thing that personally I'm not too fussed about when it comes to individual issues and stuff. No. I never have been. I know there's a lot of small press people who they get involved with variant covers, especially with Kickstarters and things like that. You know, they can be quite popular, but when it comes to like buying books off the shelf, just because it's a different sort of cover, I'm not too fussed. I quite like the original covers. I don't know why. It's just a weird.
Yeah, I don't enjoy the photographs of cats dressed as the character covers.
I'm going to get it every time. But I will say that when you see all the variant covers in the back like this, just loads of them, and it just, you know, you've got like, what have we got here? A retailer bonus cover, Baltimore Comic Con variant cover. You've got Cover B. You've got Gotham Central variant cover. You've got
I don't mind it in trade paperbacks, actually, funny enough. I don't mind seeing them.
Because it becomes a pin-up section then, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it's all right, that, yeah.
Yeah. The only niggle I would have, because actually I would say that the story's phenomenal, pretty much. I couldn't say anything bad about the interiors, and they've absolutely smashed it. The only niggle I would have would be just about the book jacket itself.
All right.
Because I find that the cover that they use is, you know, it is cool. It seems like more of an individual issue cover. And when I think you do like omnibuses or bigger covers and stuff, you've got the option to do something a bit special, you know, to do something fresh. You know, if you're going to collect the three trades,
yeah,
you know, put something new. This one, I mean, it's obviously it's a nice image, but I don't think it's that strong a cover image. And plus, it's got something that always... They've just got a couple of sort of pull quotes, and they're sort of floating on the cover.
Yeah, it could be stronger the cover. It doesn't tell you what it's about.
No.
I'm looking at this one. Is this the one with the sort of pink cover, and it's got that kind of black demon thing?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can understand the kind of pull quote placement is very odd.
Yeah, very odd. And on the back, see, on the back itself, they've got a couple of, and this is probably the way Aftershock does their books anyway, you know, their design, the way they've got the stuff set out. But you can just see part of, because I always thought that the cover for issue one was spectacular anyway, where you just, it was like a deep red cover. It's probably the cover of the trade, actually, with, like, you know, the black shadowy, like, arc coming towards you and tentacles rising from the sea on either side. That was pretty much a perfect cover for this. Whereas I think this cover doesn't really do it too much justice, which is a shame because it's pretty much perfect inside. So,
is it the was that like the cover for the trade? It's not like a cover they've repurposed. Especially done.
I think it's specially done. I could be wrong because it does show the covers, like, you know, when you get like the chapters all the way through.
Because they've done their size. That's really striking. It does. You can. Okay. Was, you know, we do our cover like from Comixology. If I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, I'd have a look at that.
Which but one? What, the cover they've used? Or
yeah, I mean, I would definitely click on that to take a look at it at a larger size. But yeah, maybe it doesn't work so much when you've actually got it in.
It's a one doe image, so there's nothing wrong with it. But it just, some of the covers inside would work better. And there's some stuff.
Who's that? One Doe, I remember I bought a print of his, a Morbius print. I miss that print.
You're still not over it, are you, Tony?
No.
No. But yeah, get it. Obviously, there'll be collections digital. You get it from bookshops, Amazon. Just order it. If you haven't heard of it before, you really should, because this is a, you know, now's the right time to get on board with it. It feels like something that surely, with this kind of synopsis, it feels to me like a 30 Days of Night synopsis. You know, as soon as you hear it, you just think, well, that's a fucking $1 million.
Yeah, rehearing it, it's like, oh, fucking hell, yeah, that is a great synopsis.
That's just like, that's genius. Why didn't I think of it before?
I don't know why I didn't pick this up when Tony mentioned it, to be honest.
Yeah. No, you'd really like it, dude. It's really good. Yeah, highly recommended. Yeah, so there you go, Dark Arc from Aftershock Comics. Who wants to go next?
Cool. Do you want to go, D? Because I think we'll all join in on my one, because I'm going to talk about my exploration.
Okay, my one, it's a fucking animated film, and I briefly mentioned it during the week.
But hold on, folks.
Like, years ago, it was on a Twitter competition, and my wife entered, and we got a free copy of the animated Batman, The Killing Joke. Yes,
yeah.
And it's been sitting in the fucking clean, like the plastic for years. And I was just going through the DVDs, thinking about what DVD can I stick on in the background while I'm doing work or whatever. And I thought, I haven't tried that. I know what the story is. So I know there was a little bit beforehand, and there's a bit of controversy when it first came out. And I thought, I'll try it. I'll see what it's like. It can't be that bad. But fucking hell. That's just unbelievable. I was like watching it, and just, it was like a little voice said, yeah, you hate this. And I was like, yeah, I do. Fucking hate this. This is awful.
We must have the same voice, Dan, because when I watched it a long time ago, I think just after it came out or whatever, I saw it and I just thought, And I know there was a lot of controversy.
The scene
about
on
it.
The roof with Batgirl.
It's
that's
disgusting.
The scene I went, what?
It's disgusting. It's just completely unnecessary, inappropriate, completely against what the characters would do. Like, for Barbara, it's like sleeping with a dad's best mate.
Yeah.
And, like, Batman sleeping with his best mates, even going beyond best mates, like, daughter. And it's like a proto-daughter to him. Like, he's brought her up and trained her how to do what she does.
Is it written by Azzarello, that movie?
It might be, yeah.
Because I know that he almost had a fight with someone in the audience at a convention a few years ago around it, didn't he?
What,
he was somebody dead, so it's terrible. He was calling them a prick and all sorts of things, yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
And, like, I think they were trying to empower the character before, like, the Killing Joke element of the film started.
Which
it off.
Is a completely different fucking...
It's,
It was like someone said, let's do the Killing Joke. It's a classic. Oh, but it's not very long, is it?
We need extra bits. Yeah, let's have Batman sleep with Batgirl on the roof of a fucking building. It was almost like that.
It's about that crime. Like, it's a younger crime guy wants to take over the business from his uncle. And in the process, Batgirl's stopping him. And he starts fetishizing her to the point where he gets to hire a prostitute with ginger hair, red hair like her, and gets her to wear a mask. And sort of like, there's elements of sort of like sexual threat from him to her. Like, there's a point where he gasses her and he says, like, you've got like a minute before you fall unconscious, and then you're like, you're mine or whatever. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, why is this?
It's got me thinking about Diana Troy from Star Trek Next Generation. Yeah, I think I might do that myself.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
But like, it's just. It's weird that I not usually like feel that strong about stuff, but I was genuinely repulsed by it. I really thought this is no place in the world. It's horrible.
Yeah. It's because it's like a really badly made sort of Batgirl story that then they just complete, you know, it's nothing.
I think they do it to empower her, but if anything, it just makes the character worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's my hot take on a 2-year-old animated film.
Yeah, you're not alone. So there's a lot of people.
And there's a lot of people. I think like they say they used to like The Killing Joke, but now hate it. I quite like The Killing Joke for what it is.
Yeah. But I love the art in it. Bloody hell!
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Not double dipped and got the one with the revised colouring.
No, I haven't either. Yeah, I don't hear great things, but yeah, it's a good comic. What are you talking about? It's of that period, isn't it? It's that sweet spot, as we like to call it, don't we, in the 80s when everything's brilliant.
It is what it is. Like, the colouring is what it is. I don't want to see a revised version because it is what it is. You can't retroactively change because you don't agree with the way it's coloured. It's just move on.
Yeah.
As we've said previously in this very show.
Indeed. Right, so what you got then, Tony?
Right, okay. So I had a challenge last week to give me a manga to read. I used to read a lot of manga. I've probably read 60, 70 volumes of manga when it first sort of hit the UK. So Domu and, you know, Akira and all this sort of thing. And I enjoyed it and I liked it for what it is. And I found it interesting and different. But then suddenly it became more common to print it in the Eastern fashion as opposed to the Western fashion, which my old 63-year-old eyes don't follow. Because I'm so used to them darting down to the right, you know.
It sometimes fucks, like, especially when you've got like a tall panel and then two next to it. When I'm reading right to left, that really fucks me up.
And speech in one panel when you're reading the wrong way don't work as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that sometimes. So we read from left to right in Western style comics, don't we?
Yeah.
So I kind of dropped out and I was always a bit sad. And occasionally I would buy a comic and try and just get it wrong and not appreciate, you know, you meant to start at the back and it just wasn't working. So I put the challenge out yesterday, and I suppose with the dawn of Guided View, it has improved it slightly.
Okay, yeah. I didn't think of that. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, there's still issues because you're reading the wrong you're reading the wrong bits in the panel. And the actually, you know, when you press the button for Guided View, it moves, it flows, you know. It doesn't just suddenly change panel. It kind of moves on the page, doesn't it? And it goes the wrong way. And if you're paying too much attention, it kind of still gets me wrong. I said, oh, what's happening there? I'm going the wrong way. But so I'll give it a go. I put a couple of shout outs and there was quite a few replies actually to it. One of which was Berserk, which I know Sam and you, Dan, and you, Vince. Yeah. There's a few people recommended that, which I have now got. Thank you very much for the gift, Dan. I haven't started on that one, but I decided to bottle it a bit and go. I didn't want to go into this sort of wide eyed world of Sailor Moon or any of that BS.
Nah.
So I thought I'm going to go old school.
That's a very
shots fired. Shots
say.
Fired.
Yeah. So I thought I'm going to go into a traditional. So I'd read Lone Wolf and Cub. I'd read Lone Wolf and Cub when it was coming out of, was it Dark Horse? I'm trying to think. Oh, no, it's First Comics. Back when Talk of the Devil, Frank Miller was drawing the covers to it, and then Matt Wagner drew a few, and I loved that series. And I really, really liked it. And the art style by Goseki Kojima. Is the same in this one. It's also written by Kazu Koiki. It's Path of the Assassin, Volume 1, Serving in the Dark, 319 pages, digest format. And it tells a set in the Sengoku period, and it's basically the story of the oncoming shogun. So The story of Hattori Hanzo, a famous ninja whose duty was to protect Tokugawa Ieyasu, who would become the shogun. And it's a true story, in as much as it can be from that long ago. Set in 1557 AD, or around that time. And the shogun is something of a sort of chubby idiot at times, but there's little sparks here and there of what he's like. And this new... have you read it, Dan?
No, I'm familiar with the story, though.
The story, right, okay. Yeah, and he's given a ninja. There's a really interesting training sequence, or almost like a job interview at the start of it, where there's a sort of head of the thieves, head of the ninja type characters, and he's saying, go and steal that vase in the stall opposite to these two brothers. You can't cause a scene, you can't assault the person, but you have to steal that huge vase, which is heavier than they can carry. These two young guys. So the two brothers try it, and one brother fails. He says there's no way of doing it without assaulting the guy, it's too heavy to lift. And the younger brother goes over and he shows him his sword and says, can you value my sword, and how much would you pay for that sort of thing? And while the geezer's looking at it, he nicks a load more stuff off his smaller items from the guy's stall, brings it, says, no, I don't want to sell my sword now, goes back to the master of the thieves, certain ninjas, and says, look, I've stolen these, what we do is we sell these and then I buy the vase. And that's the same as stealing it. And the geezer says, right, give him them back, pay for them, give him this money, and you've passed. Which is a really interesting, like, sort of Eastern story, you know. I just really like the sort of
thinking way around the problem.
Yeah, really like that. Suddenly I was in. I thought, right, I'm in on this. The art by Kojima is just fucking beautiful. I'm absolutely in love with it. The way that he uses ink, I can only compare to the beauty of Japanese calligraphy. You know, he's got that. You can see, you can see the use of that brush on it, you know, and the hairs on the brush, and he has the ability to do stuff from a distance with only a few marks, which show something, you know, like a horse riding over a ridge somewhere, or he can do the beauty of the close up, you know, and you get all the details of the horse and stuff like that, and it's just amazing. He mostly worked with Koiki. He worked on Lone Wolf and Cub and Shogun Assassin with the other two titles, which kind of made up most of his career, Kojima, actually, because they're long running. I think this is one is 40 volumes. I mean, there's 309 pages per volume or something. But yeah, there's quite a thing. The writer Kiki, he also worked on Lady Snowblood as well, which I haven't read, and Crying Freeman, which I have read. Which is nuts.
It's fucking nuts.
And there's a couple of themes that occur in both these books. And he died last year. He also took over Golgo 13. Okay. Yeah, he became the writer. Okay. Thing. He was huge into golf and wrote a load of golf manga. That's always riveting.
Yeah, they love that stuff over there, though.
They do, I know, yeah, basketball and baseball manga, yeah. And he wrote X-Men Unlimited 50, believe it or not, which I own. I must go back and find. The collaboration between the two of them was referred to in Japanese culture as the Golden Duo. Which I think is kind of nice. It's, you know, these classic Kirby and Lee and Rosina and Uderzo and these sort of people. There's those classic joining of creators that give you more than the single person, you know, which is really lovely.
Yeah.
It's not for the faint of heart. It's, oh dear, man, there's some moments in it and you think it's very violent. It lacks modern morals. I'll put it that way. It's brutal and nasty and quick to act.
It tries to reflect the time period.
Yeah.
As in, there's scenes in, like, the Shogun, say, Lone Wolf, that's like, this is fucking horrible, and there's no real justice or the good things happened here. It's just, that's the way it goes. It's, harsh.
The one of the heroes finds a girl swimming and pulls her on the beach, and there's a very affecting, I found it quite upsetting, rape scene. It's not nice at all. And they're discovered by these sort of three sort of lawmen stroke local, you know, guys, and he kills them. He kills all three of them. And this is all the while being watched by the future shogun, who's this fat bloke just looking over the top of the ridge at them, him raping this girl. And it doesn't give the right messages. It doesn't show it punished. It doesn't do anything that, because like you say, Dan, it's specific to the period. where women were treated in a much worse way than they are these days. And she's raped, and afterwards he asks her name, and she says, "Will you tell me my name?" And you now essentially own me. It's fucking very hell. Rough. Yeah, very rough.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, and there's another moment with he gets a wife, the shogun or the future shogun, and he's already been beaten badly by the sort of training with wooden swords in front of all of the society, and he's shamed. And it's part of his sort of growing experience of who he's becoming and who he will become, because he became the shogun that joined up much of China later on. And afterwards, it's a really uncomfortable sex scene. It's really strange. It's he can only really have sex with her with her ass up in the air from behind, and he says, "Why can we only make love like beasts?" And it's amazing storytelling, but it's very it's not for everyone.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, but like I say, it's based on real characters. There's some. I'm getting my eye in for manga. I think this is a good entry drug if you are used to sort of adult stories and you've seen. I'm a big fan of Japanese cinema, not as much as some other people, like Jay Gunn's always educating me and sending me, "You should watch this, watch that," but I grew up on Seven Samurai and these sort of things. So I'm getting my eye in around it, and they use sound effects in this very well, so the swoosh of a sword will be incorporated into the movement of the sword, and there's that sort of thing, which is actually really beautiful. But the art really, sorry mate, you can say.
If we ever get into like doing a whole show on it, and I personally don't feel absolutely qualified in doing so, the influence of their motion and movement they put in their comics, which has bled into Western, is undeniable.
Yeah. Completely and utterly.
You can see it a lot in like these examples here.
Yeah. And I was fully prepared for each panel to be very, I suppose, from a Western point of view, under-rendered, with lacking backgrounds and real detail. But this is more than enough for me in these. There's some beautiful shots. There's one, you go to a shot over, there's like a fishing village with the lights and the mist, and it's all done in black and white. It's a very basic black and white. There's no grey tones or anything. And there's a mist over the village, and he illuminates his little lights shooting out through the mist at the base of this mountain. And it is incredibly beautiful, really touching. And I'm a fan of that sort of thing. It's just amazing. But it flows enough. I don't need the backgrounds. I don't need it. And when you're watching a guided view, it's kind of it's a strange experience, because you're not turning pages. I use it on an iPad with a keyboard, and I've got I use the arrows rather than swiping the screen. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I use the arrows and just keep tapping that arrow. It becomes a different experience. The only different thing is I'm tapping the wrong arrow because I'm going backwards. Using the other arrow. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is, I don't think that's how it's always been on Comixology. I seem to remember reading Shogun Assassin and it not being that way.
Right.
But they've obviously just done it that way. Maybe it's easier. I'm going to keep going with it, man. I'm in for it now.
In for it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I'm absolutely becoming educated in the way of just the gorgeous ink marks, the flow of it, and the beautiful. And sometimes it does look a little bit dated. It's like reading a British, British comic, black and white comic. There's a little bit of the dated moments to it, but it's so different and so strange and so shockingly different in points. Really making my head swim. Have you read any of this, V?
Cultural differences.
No, not that one. No.
Have you read Lone Wolf and Cub?
A little bit here and there, but that's another one I need to.
Yeah. So then we watch Shogun Assassin.
Yeah.
That's a good point, actually. I tell you what.
We should do a watch party on that. We'll play at the same time and then watch through.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do our own little Zoom party for that, shall we? That sounds a bit sordid when we put it like that.
Because you can get Lone Wolf and Cub in two formats. So this is the physical releases of this one. Are those like digest size books? Thick spine things, but they're small. But you can get, they used to do it in American, do you remember the Dark Knight Prestige format? The sort of slightly, so they've got a small spine to them.
That's the
Lone Wolf and Cubs. That's how they did it. And they redid the covers with American artists, and there's some great stuff on them. And I kind of want to go to eBay and buy them that way now. I just kind of like that,
Nice.
But yeah, I'd recommend it if you were looking for something that's a bit different and you don't know manga, and I don't. And it is, I found it very, very good. Yeah. Really impressed. Yeah.
Awesome.
There you go. That's awesome. One. Cool.
Right. So we have some shout outs. I mean, I haven't got any shout outs because.
You're done, aren't you?
I'm done. I can just sit back and put my feet up.
You got any, Dan?
I do. I've got two.
Come in.
Three. A lie.
Okay.
First, an article from Dan Tubes on London's Cartoon Museum, run by the Cartoon Art Trust charity, is currently launched a fundraising appeal to help it survive as a continued closure because of the coronavirus pandemic restrictions means that it's facing like the possibility of closure. So we're going to link the full article for John Freeman's Down the Tubes, which you can read about it. But any money to help them keep going is going to be fantastic because they're really struggling. I don't think they're going to look at opening up till the later part of the year. So it may be a resource and a place that it could be lost.
Yeah.
So if you can read the article and if you can give them some money, please do.
We can't be without that in London, can we?
No.
Or in the country, I suppose. And I know there's other versions of it, but we really need that. We need something to show the art form off like that. And I know they do a lot of releases and talks and stuff like that there. I think it's worth it, yeah.
I agree, yeah. I'll give them a few quid.
Shall I do one of mine?
Yeah, go for it.
Galaxy Grappling Alliance Issue 2 is out by Damon Edwardson. So going back there, I've backed it. It's almost there, actually. He's not asking for much. It's a good little fun comic if you like wrestling. It's a good laugh.
Yeah.
Art 92, who he's part of, I mean, the husband and wife, Helena, also has, she's got a great, I bought this as a present. It's a great learn to draw, bit of fun drawing thing. It's not expensive. She took a lovely sketch in it of Sharknado, to be fair, and sent it through, just fun drawing animals and stuff like that. And it's just a good little thing if you're doodling at your desk or in the evenings. It's a fun little thing to do. Yes, yeah, worth doing. So I've got that as well.
Nice.
I've got another one.
Go for it, Dan. Go on.
I've got another two. I've got the Kickstarter shout out.
Okay, go on.
The Hordes of Surrey. So that's running at the moment. It's currently written by Dave Wimblett, who's a newbie to indie comic scene. Drawn by a longtime fan and friend of the show, Rory Donald.
Hey.
He's done something for Quarantine. He's Griff Gristle, Cast Adrift. God, Rory's done a lot of work. He's appeared on the show a couple of times in interview format, but we're hopefully looking to readdress that soon.
We haven't actually contacted him yet, but we're looking to have him on the show.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll have heard this before we actually email him, but yeah.
We've got, and doing the lettering, we've got the legend Ken Reynolds, who's
obviously
known for Cognition and Slice Quarterly. And
I can't speak highly enough of Ken's lettering, and you'll see it as well, haven't you? Because you've been designing some of his stuff, and he did some lettering for me recently, and he did some lettering for a very high-profile creator who wrote to me and said, thanks for introducing me to Ken, he is brilliant. And I agree. I think Ken's done really, really pushing the boundaries of what good lettering is, I think. Yeah, really good stuff.
He's lettered my work for Turner.
Oh, cool. Oh, nice.
Strip he did that.
Yeah, so, good stuff, man. Hi, Ken.
And finally, bringing it back to Art 92. I was on an episode with Luke Copsey, who's another small press creator, and it was on Omen to that, and we talk about film posters, movie posters, nice. The good movie posters, what makes a good movie poster, and bad ones.
Does that drop yet, that episode?
I believe he put it out today.
Oh, so I must download it.
It should be knocking around today. And there's we were asked to bring up, like, talk about our favourite three film posters. And I brought one of mine, and I did a bit of research on it. And I've been looking at this poster probably for about 20, 30 years. And I read about it, and I was like, I never saw that before. And
right.
I was like, fucking hell. I didn't see that.
We need to talk about this off air. Don't want to put any spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers. Yeah.
So you have to listen to the podcast or talk to me off air after the show.
Yeah.
Cool. I've got one more. I did some comic art this week, believe it or not. I played about with an abstract comic of Gareth, totally with his permission, incidentally, with Gareth Hopkins. He put out a page of his comic and said, does anyone want to play with it? So I added some lines and ink and stuff, and then I added some words from Sybil Danning in Black Diamond 1 from AC Comics in 1983. Nice. I just wanted to quirk it up a bit, and he very kindly put it out on his blog. So if you go to garethhopkins.blogspot.com, you can see mine and much better versions of it that other people have done. Yeah, I had real fun just doodling with that one. It's good stuff.
Nice.
Very relaxing doing that sort of abstraction. Mm. Yeah, really enjoyed that evening.
I've never done abstract stuff, really.
Yeah, I bought some books on it recently. I bought a book by William Ray, who I saw. I saw somebody recommended it on Facebook. I thought I like that, and I find it a really interesting art form, and it's something. Yeah, I need to know more about.
Mm.
Nice.
I've got a couple of mini ones, of course. Copies of MI666 are still available. Yeah. So if you go to andybloorcomics.bigcartel.com, you can get your copy of the new comic from myself and Andy Bloor.
His art's really good on that, Andy. Yeah, really like good. It.
Yeah, yeah. And we've been touched by all the nice feedback we've been getting. So thank you very much for that. And thank you, David Livens, from all of us at the Awesome Pilot, who sent us a lovely email. We read out and answered a question last week. We don't just answer the questions of the people we know. we just read out whatever questions we get.
Very needy because we don't get any.
Yeah. David sent us a very nice letter, and he's a comics fan that has been doing more drawings. So, unfortunately, David, you've told us about it now. So now we just want some comics from you.
Yeah. So good stuff.
You've got yourself in trouble there, my son. Anyway. Right. Okay. So
well, I've got one more to give out. Can I just do one more? So thanks
to
Joe.
We're on fire with the show.
I know. Thanks to Joseph Simons this week, who sent me some zines of his, which I'm going to look at. There you go.
Ah, nice. Bloody hell, the show notes are just getting longer and longer this week. But hey-ho, it just means you've got more brilliant stuff to check out, including three more titles that we're going to talk about now. So should we go in the opposite direction we went last time? So Tony, do you want to go first? Dan, you're in the middle as always, my love.
Yes.
Yeah, you're like the jam in our sandwich, baby cakes. Yeah. Yeah. The Elisa Dark, Werewolves and Bampots, issue 2 by Terrier Comics, full colour magazine size, all created by possible future guest William Crawford Hazel. So Elisa Dark is a good looking raven haired late night horror host, you know, the old school, like Elvira, I suppose, something like that. She introduces classic and horror movies and B movie science fiction and horror movies at night. That's kind of her normal job, but she's also a supernatural investigator in Glasgow. She's adept at magic, but there's a sort of little twist where the old story about using magic, you expend certain things from yourself and it's a dangerous thing to do and it's not a safe thing to do and stuff like that. She rides about on a motorbike. She's quite badass. She carries two sort of 45s or 9mm automatic pistols on her. They hint at this issue that she isn't perhaps as young as she appears, because there's a couple who are part of the backstory who are watching a movie, and it's like an extra reel, like a audition reel of a Bela Lugosi movie, which she is the actress in. And you think, there's more to her than meets the eye. This is a 3-issue series. It was going to initially been launched as a 4-issue series, but I think it's down to 3, and issue 3 is going to be a longer version of it. It's, I think it was in Indiegogo. I got it on. Smashed its total, stuff like that. A Bampot, for those that don't know, is an idiot, an objectionable and foolish person. Elisa has also got an undead demon assistant who is what's called, his name's Umair Nawaz, and his name is a banter demon. That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's part of his sort of demonology history. Top Trump's history is he's a banter demon. It's a really good project. It's really interesting, and it really spikes for me what I like in horror comics. It's fresh, it's action orientated, it's fun, but it's got a little eye to stuff like the Monster Squad. Yeah, it's got a little eye to werewolf movies. There's loads of werewolves in it. There's kind of werewolves dressed up as if they are Reservoir Dogs, and they're one of them's like a bodyguard for someone. Really cool ideas. It starts off with her after a sort of brief intro from this couple sitting there watching the movie that we just mentioned. She's suddenly presented by this demon that she's called through a portal and needs a favor from. And it's really well done. It's that lovely combination of action but also talking heads, and he's got a great way of doing the personalities of the characters in it. They all shine out. The art is just so much better. The first issue was good, but this is just, he's really gone all out on designs. I sent you guys some pages earlier, didn't I, to have a look at.
Yes.
Yeah. I think knowing your taste in that sort of Monster Squad kind of.
I love all that.
Yeah. I think you'd dig this, man, because there's vampires and werewolves and demons, and it's a bit like,
I'm in.
There's a kind of, imagine if Lord of Illusions, the Scott Bakula movie, was set in Glasgow and it was Vampirella on a motorbike. That's kind of the way it feels a bit to me. Really ramps up this issue. I'm really impressed with where he's taken it. I see William at conventions and stuff. I saw him at Edinburgh and I saw him at Glasgow when I was up there. God rest their souls. We miss you. But the He's a nice guy and a big comics fan, really fond, and quotes in the, I think, the afterward, the Bronze Age stuff. He says, I'm really into the Bronze Age sort of comics, so creepies and eeries, and like I said, vampirellas and stuff like that, and Marvel Warren magazines and, you know, this sort of thing, and it's really good. It's got some imaginative balls-to-the-wall adventure. You can follow him at @Crawford_Hazel, H-A-Z-L-E. It was Indiegogo.com/project/Elisa Dark. Yeah, watch out. Number three, I got the. I don't understand Indiegogo. I don't understand Kickstarter, but I don't understand Indiegogo either. But I seemed to get a load of comics off him and a load of sketches, and I thought I'd just gone in for the comic. But I'm not sure if it's one of those things where you go along, you hit certain points, you add things or something. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how it works on there. It's not one I've dipped my toe into, but he's done really well on it, and he sent me some lovely sketches. And he's a one man comic creator. He's done the art, the coloring, the lettering, the writing, the putting it, the design, everything, and it's all top notch. I have to say, he'd definitely be a sort of person I would look to design a comic, if not even draw it. You know, yeah. Good-o, that's my one.
Nice
one,
Dan.
During the last show we talked about the Zavvi offer, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Getting the five books, and one of mine was Green Lantern, Green Arrow, the Hard Traveling Heroes, a collection. It's got originally published Green Lantern issue 76 to 81, published in December 1970, so many years before I was born.
And me.
I accidentally put the wrong address, and it went to a house down the road. So I had to knock on the door and say, "Excuse me, is there a box of comics for me?" And there was an old deer, and it was still like in the porch. And I'm like, "Oh, that's mine." Oh, yeah, right. So off I went.
And yeah, more porn.
Yeah. And then my wife said, "I think we should introduce a policy of one in, one out." And I was like, "Nah." No. So yeah, this covers the kind of, I guess it was a bit of a, comics were taken on social issues.
Yeah.
And some of this stuff now is like, we're still talking about this stuff today, but I can, at the time this came out, this must have been like, fucking hell, this is quite hard hitting. Like, what? It's like 40, 50 year old story. And the line, there's one page that's kind of like, kind of frames the comic. And in the beginning of the story, Green Lantern's flying through the air and he sees like some youth like roughing up a guy in a suit, and he instantly down there grabs the youth, says, "Don't worry, sir, like I'll sort you out." And then he starts getting pelted by cans and rubbish from the sidewalk, and basically this guy's a slumlord, and he keeps all these tenants in like the most abominable conditions. And Green Arrow comes in and starts talking to him about how his like moral compass is off. And he's approached by an older black man, and he says, this guy says to Hal Jordan, "I've been reading about how you worked for the Blueskins, and on a planet someplace you helped out the Orange Skins, and you've done considerable for the Purple Skins. Only their skins you haven't bothered with, the Black Skins. I want to know how come. Answer me that, Green Lantern." And Hal Jordan's like got just shoulders down, head down, and he's like, "I can't." And essentially the story...
real moment. I mean, that's
yeah, it's a real moment.
Talked about every year since. Yeah. Amazing.
And the story is that Hal Jordan essentially needs his moral compass reassessing, recalibrating, and him and Green Arrow and one of the Guardians who wants to kind of learn more about Earth culture go on essentially road trip, and they've come across a lot of sort of moral quandaries where they've come across an issue where Green Lantern approaches it very much from the left and Hal Jordan's very much from the right. Not to the extremes which we'd talk about now. Somebody said, "Well, someone's on the left, they've fucking got purple hair, and you know, and even on the right, they're like two steps away from being a Nazi."
Yeah.
It's a bit more kind of nuanced than that. But Hal essentially sees the world as pretty much right and wrong, black and white, and Green Lantern sees it a lot more nuanced, and he tries to kind of bring Hal around. So it's a really interesting series. There's lots of social issues which they broach, which at the time I can imagine was very brave of them to do so.
It's amazing. I mean, the scene you're talking about there with the old man, that if you put that face on Twitter, everyone would recognize it. Because he's sort of an older guy, and he's really character-driven and distinctive and real. And, Denny O'Neill, man, we talked about him last week. He was that guy. He's that generation of writers who came out of, you know, where America had been. They'd been in Vietnam, and they'd had the summer of love, and and things were beginning to turn in the '70s. You know, it less become about LSD and become more about heroin, and it was taking a turn, and people were sort of desperate to keep those values, and stuff like this was coming out all over the place, and it's brilliant storytelling, you know, yeah. Really good.
I mean, Neil Adams, the art, like there's several bits like that chap with the older guy talking to Hal, where he does like like half a page is dominated by like someone's face, and it's obviously taken heavy reference for it, but it's still in the style of the comic. But the emotion and sort of everything blazing on it really, really sells what they're trying to say.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic comic throughout.
That sort of stuff is why Green Arrow is one of my favorite characters, and he holds that. He holds that situation of, you know, being about the people. There's a famous moment in a much later series from the 80s where he someone runs out of a shop. We were talking about this earlier. Runs out of a shop carrying, I think it's a load of nappies or something like that. And he's the shop owner shouting, "Chief, thief, catch him. And Green Arrow ends up catching the shop owner because the shop owner is taking advantage of the terrible situation in that city by overcharging for nappies. And it makes you realize nothing's quite that simple anymore. You know, the world's moved on. Yeah.
And also, like, as mates, they roughly punch each other at least once every issue.
Right, okay.
Constantly punching each other. I guess that's how they have arguments in superhero comics, don't they? It's like, you like talk about your moral stance while you're punching the other geezer in the face.
Yeah.
And that's how you get around having discussions rather than them just sitting in a diner having words.
And that's not that's not the whole of their run, because they did the drugs issue, didn't they, with Speed?
Yeah.
As well.
It cuts off before then. So it's a shame it misses that out. I presume it might have been done in another issue.
Because everyone talks about the Spider-Man issue, which is the one Stan Lee decided not to use the comics code on it with the drugs issue. But they did the same for that one. That was another one. They bucked the trend. And a real, real milestone in comics, man. Like, amazing. I recommend anyone to buy that. And I know, look, I know Neil Adams can be a bit, let's say, strange occasionally, you know, but. This is incredible. There's so many people we talk about who owe him, they're heavily influenced by that series from 50 years ago.
Yeah, what's interesting as well, like the writers using exploring these themes with two characters who have contrasting views on stuff. And it's a very nuanced way of telling the story rather than having a character stand there and preach at the reader what's right and what's wrong. And
we're often missing that. I texted you guys earlier. I read something by a small press company over here today, and it had none of that. It was just a diatribe in a comic form by someone who wasn't taking anyone else's opinion into account. And that discussion is what we should be having without having this like polarized, he's a Nazi, he's a libtard, you know, that seems to be the two versions of it.
It should be like, there's a conversation. These characters are arguing over a point, and there's nuanced to it rather than just... almost like it's a propaganda piece saying this is the way you should think, and if you think otherwise, you're wrong. And it's like, well, that doesn't, it's not a convincing way of getting someone to,
that's what's got us in
trouble,
reconsider
their points.
Really good choice, mate. I highly recommend it. And if that Zavvi deal's still going, I went in for it. I went in for it large. So, and it was I think about five books for like $15.99 or something.
Yeah,
brilliant. It's five for 15, I believe.
I had to stop myself going in twice because someone said the solos books on there are fucking great, and there's two of them. And I thought, well, if I got those two, I'd have to fluff out, get another three, which I didn't do. So obviously we can't do the old get the comics delivered to work and sneak them home routine at the moment.
I got the Golden Age book by James Robinson, which is brilliant. I only had that in issues.
So
I think I got Invasion as well, because it just made me laugh.
I bought that Superman Batman Public Enemy just because fucking Ed McGuinness's art. I love it so much.
I bought the Teen Titans one, because I don't have a card back of that, so I thought I'll get that because the Teen Titans thing looks nice. Yeah,
nice. Hopefully that sale's still on.
Yeah, you're not gone in for it, V?
No, I went in for it at one point, and then I had real trouble just sort of narrowing down my picks. So I expect over the next week, if it's still on, it probably won't be now that I've said it, but if it's still on,
I've been over your house now, and you could put it in the west wing of your house, couldn't you?
Oh yeah, I certainly could.
I was making a comment when Tony was live streaming, it's walking up to your house, Vince. I said, I'd expected a thatched roof.
He's got an in and out driveway.
I'm not fucking Thomas Hardy.
Yeah. Rose Cottage, baby. Rose Cottage.
Anyway, you posted up a picture of a cow, and it was like cow of the week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's one of my favourite Twitter accounts. Cow of the week is just a brilliant Twitter account to follow.
I mean, don't read anything into this. That was pretty. That was a pretty attractive cow.
That
I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah, that was a good looking cow. My birthday cow. Anyway.
Right, come on, V, you're next.
Yeah. So from one form of emotional storytelling to another, and my final pick is a book, another book I got as part of my birthday lot. It's almost like people know I like graphic novels, so they just gave me lots of things to read, which is quite nice. Yeah. My co-writer on Black, Dan Chant, he sent me this one, and it's one that I was aware of, and I remember seeing sort of artwork on social media and stuff. You understand why when you see who the artist is in a minute, but it didn't really sort of click with me until I saw it, and I was like, oh god, I think I did know about this, and it's called A Letter to Joe.
Oh yeah, I've downloaded this today.
Yeah,
I must read this. Yeah,
this is from Top Shelf Productions, and the creators are, it's written by Joseph Siraki, I hope I got that right, art by Kelly Williams, friend of the show and awesome pod fave. Lettering by Taylor Esposito.
Cool.
Now what this is a non-fiction and biography and memoir style comic book. This is on the back, is the best way to put it, is on the back, it says it really nicely. As Leonard fights on the front lines of World War II, memories of Josephine help keep him alive. As Josephine contends with life, family and work in Cleveland, letters from Leonard sustain her, but official censorship forces him to leave out much of the action he sees. Finally, with the war coming to an end, Leonard is able to tell his full story. In a quietly beautiful letter to Josephine, Leonard writes of the loneliness he felt, the camaraderie he experienced, and the terrible violence he witnessed. Now, a little bit of backstory to this. There is a wonderful foreword and a sort of epilogue, well, an afterword, by the writer Joseph Siraki. That's what I said, isn't it? Yeah. Siraki, because Leonard is his grandfather. And this book is basically what they've done. It's the narration that goes through it is the letter, the actual letter that he wrote to his wife, well, his soon-to-be wife, when he was away on the front lines and he was travelling through like Belgium and Cardiff and well, in Wales, and you know, they travelled all across his sort of platoon, like his American sort of platoon. And basically, Joseph has sort of carefully sort of researched the moment, the sort of battles that sort of Leonard describes, because it's a real letter. Because it's a real letter, it doesn't sort of, you know, it's not going to go into graphic detail of like what lots of things happen. So, you know, Joseph has taken the time and researched, you know, he's sort of linked up the things that happened and those battles. He found out what he could about those moments where his grandfather was. And expanded the letter, and sort of has written dialogue and moments around that as well to sort of, you know, give it a sort of narration and sort of fill the gaps and visually. And then Kelly's come along and sort of totally made the whole thing look beautiful. And this is a really sort of moving, a real touching story and portrait. And when you know that, you know, this is like real, if you know what I mean. It takes like the artwork and stuff you see on another level. I mean, anyone that's seen Kelly's work will know. I mean, we love him. He's tailor-made for Man-Thing. For God's sake, give him a Man-Thing comic book. And he's done a lot of dark sort of artwork and stuff. And this was a different kind of feel.
There's a real use of colour in this, in the much more extensive use of colour than I'm used to seeing with him.
Yeah. And it's certainly, you have the bit at the beginning, you know, you know, because Joseph has padded out with a little bit of backstory before the letter even begins, and like tells a story of like how his parents, even from the first time they met in high school, a lot was sort of stacked against them. Like Leonard was a first generation sort of Polish American, and of course his parents wanted him to marry a girl from the old country, as it says. Whereas Joe was a first generation from Sicily. Her parents were from Sicily, who wanted exactly the same thing. But, you know, above all that, they just wanted to be together. And, you know, against, you know, what everyone thought, they just loved each other. And, of course, just after he pops the question, he's off to war. And, you know, we don't need to say what usually happens in those stories when people go off to war. So, one thing I thought was interesting was the censorship of these letters, because when they sent letters back, they couldn't put in lots of detail because they were censored. Yeah. Because what if, you know, these letters were taken and then, you know, they found out, the enemy found out and then...
Do you know what? I got some back recently from my grandfather and it's got that. It's got black lines drawn through them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when that was lifted, you know, Leonard chose to sort of write an entire, now I'm towards the end. I think he was in Normandy at the time. He was kind of back to where he started. And he was like, now that this has been lifted, I want to tell you what it's been like for me. And you have these moments of camaraderie. In the letter, I think Joseph's done obviously it is a deeply personal thing to him, but he's done this in the right way, and he does explain it as well. I mean, in the letter, he's had to fictionalise some things, but to the point where his grandfather will talk about the gang. Do you know what I mean? Because to him, they were just his friends. Do you know what I mean? He's not mentioning names. But for a story like this, Joseph's sort of given the gang, you know, a couple of names and a couple of faces. So, you know, what must have been. And he has explained this in the back that, you know, there are reasons for why he's chosen the way some characters are and the way they look and things, because he thought that was quite... There's a Puerto Rican soldier that in the story that Leonard is quite good friends with. But there's no evidence that this person, you know, Frederico, I think his name is, he was invented. And as Joseph said, it was just to assist the framing of the story. And purely, like, in World War II, the United States Army was segregated, is what it says here, which is why you don't see African-American soldiers in any of Leonard's squadrons. But Hispanic soldiers, including Puerto Ricans, however, were categorized as white. Thus, Frederico would have served right alongside Leonard. Still, despite their service to their country, it has been well documented that many Hispanic soldiers were discriminated against within their ranks, facing the same injustices that they did back home. So it's good, you know, he's also taken this to highlight some things like that in the story as well. And, you know, as with all these stories, you know, when you see there's a real frontline, I mean, I'm going to say Band of Brothers and everyone will think of the TV show, but I mean that in the sense of, like, you know, the brotherhood. You get a sense of that, and then how quickly that can end, because it seems like he has a squad and everywhere they went they were just absolutely torn to pieces. Leonard was a soldier that he was given like one of the bigger machine guns, I've forgotten the name of it now, and they said everyone in the squad should name their gun, and he named his gun Death. He literally named it Death. And so when he mentions it, like, throughout, like, you know, he said Death did a lot of work that day. And even though that's just in the letter, you can, you know, Kelly's obviously backed that up with
the weight of it.
Just the complete weight of it. And you do see sometimes it flips from those moments of, like, these battles. And there are, like, a fantastic double-page spreads and stuff of the horrors of war that have no narration on them. Do you know what I mean? It is, like... You know, and Kelly's artwork's perfect for this. It really drops you in. Like, there was a point where I think the soldiers were pushed back for 20 miles by a tank. Like, they had like a panzer tank just like advancing on them, so they had to keep going back and back and were just being absolutely, you know. So it shows that, but also, like, leading up to that, it does show, like, you know, the camaraderie and how he was haunted by things, and how he took to drink, and there's these little details that when I saw it in the back matter, like a couple of sketches and notes in the back, I had to go back and look through it, because Kelly pointed out that there's not a photo realistic likeness, but he's obviously based it on the real guy, because there's photos of the real people in the back as well. But just like in the end of the book, like Leonard he's a little more gaunt, because he's not well, and like he's been drinking, and he's not, you know, he had lost lots of weight by the time he got sent home. And to look back, it's like, oh yeah, you do see like the man at the start of this and then the man at the end. And it's just, it's powerful storytelling. I think it was a real, you know, and they I was wondering before I finished. I didn't rush to the end of the book because I just went through the story. There is another poem. They've done another thing where Brett Carville. There's a poem Leonard wrote while deployed in Europe, which is called "The Dawn Came." Which is a very sort of, and it is very much like the poem with just illustrations next to it. And it that.
What's the page count on this, man?
Roughly, it is about 120, 124.
Oh, that's good. What's the price? Is it expensive or?
What have we got here?
I got the digital one. I might get the physical copy now.
I think it's probably standard sort of paperback. I would imagine £14. It says 19. It hasn't got the UK price on this one.
Was it dollars? $19.99.
It's $19.99 dollars US and $25.99 Canada.
Are you going to pay what $16.99 on Amazon? I reckon something like that.
Yeah,
probably,
yeah,
aren't you?
Again, it's paperback one, and it's real powerful storytelling. That, you know, there's no meat on the bones. You know, the back matter is really nice. You know, the photo reference, and there is, if you wanted to read the letter itself away from the book, they do have like a scanned version of the first sheet of the letter, and then there's a typed up that, you know, someone obviously typed up afterwards. And there's a version of it in the back as well, and it's a real letter as well. You know, when you say, "Oh, there's a letter from, you know, the front lines of war," we would maybe think it's going to be really poetic. It's going to, you know, there's going to be all of these, you know, real poignant, you know, Chaucer-like words or whatever. This is a real letter by a real person, and he's just saying this is what it was like. And now I'm looking forward to seeing you when I get home. So real powerful stuff. I loved it. It's very emotional.
I heard Jason Wood talk about this on 11 o'clock comics a few months ago. And when you said you'd got it, I downloaded it for this week to read at lunch. And I might buy the physical copy now, man.
Yeah. You will chew through it in one sitting. It is a nice, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's not, there are sort of chapters and they have like titles like Hope, Love, you know, pain, things like that. And even those chapters have like lovely sort of illustrations by Kelly on them, which are quite reminiscent of what you're going to see. And it is a book that sometimes, when it comes to, like when I see a big graphic novel, I'll sometimes skip the foreword or the epilogue.
Yeah, nearly always, man. I go back and read it. I never stop.
But the prologue are fascinating as well because they're very honest from the writer. So it's a very honest book, and it's a lovely book, and it's a moment in time. You just can't imagine it, but
no, mate, people think they got it hard now, do you know what I mean?
So
I'm gonna return to that.
The story is important, but I will say hats off to everyone that was involved in this. I think
what, the Second World War?
No, the book. Oh dear God! Don't take that as a pull quote, people.
That's all involved.
Yeah, a letter to Joe.
Well, on one side, not on every side. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
They try the best, you know.
Yeah. So, get it because it is
good stuff, man.
It's really good.
Yeah, nice choice.
As were all of our recommendations this week. I think another stacked episode of the.
We've got guests next week.
First Ranger Comics. Yes, we're going to have guests coming up now where we're going to talk about all things comics. If you've got any topics that you want us to cover, for instance, I mean, it's a strange time in comics. People are making comics in the strangest kind of ways these days. And if there's something that you think we should cover or sounds quite interesting to you, then get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you just want to send us a nice letter that tells us you love us, because it'll make us go, oh, you know, like pushing boots in Shrek. We all do that.
No, that's not. I've ordered a comic on eBay for next week. If it arrives, you're in for something interesting.
Oh, fantastic. Are we finally going to have the troll episode?
No, it's a little bit of an erotic comic.
Oh, dear. Brilliant. God.
Yeah. A UK one.
Oh, my word.
From many years ago. Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to seeing what it's like.
You're going
to
have a laugh.
And hoping that my missus doesn't open it. That sort of thing, you know.
You're going to get a lot of questions about that now, Tony. Yes, and if you follow us on our various accounts, if you follow us on Twitter, it's @TheAwesomePod, where we'll post out who the guest is going to be, probably what we've talked about. We'll be retweeting this episode over and over again until people listen to it. If you do Facebook, then go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and like or follow the podcast there. I don't know what it's called with Facebook. But all I know is on Facebook, you really should join the community group, Awesome Comics Talk.
We'll see you Friday.
Yeah. Go on to Facebook. Look, search for Awesome Comics Talk. One word. What is there is a fantastic community of people that is just nothing but positive comic talk, different comics, different techniques. It's literally, if you're making a comic, ask someone on there for their advice. If you want to make someone know about an event that may, or like a workshop or anything, ask them on there.
Please put it on there. Yeah. And I have to say, not to speak of the negative, but if your first post on the group is to promote another podcast and your own Kickstarter, I'm going to say it's not going to get through.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's all be sensible. It's about conversations, not just about dropping links and leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say a big shout out to all the people that even when they've got Kickstarters running, if they're part of that group, they've been pretty sensible and they've been really good.
Yeah, they have been.
So keep it up. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. Just helps get the word out to the masses. And if you listen to us on any networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Listen, everyone needs to relax, right? Everyone needs to calm down. I know in lockdown it's difficult, but let's all sing it together. Twitter is not the real world. There you go. Just a little reminder.
Is that all one word?
Yeah, .com.
Right, okay. Anyway,
back to balls next week.
We'll be back to all kinds of nonsense next week, but thank you to everyone that sent in any questions. We are all questioned out, so we're going to be talking to some fantastic creators about their books for the next couple of months while we are slowly
very excited.
So it's gonna be great, so look forward to that. And thank you for listening to us this week. Where can people find us online, etc., Esmond?
Never on anything. Just put never on anything with no breaks in it. It's either Big Cartel or Podbean, and you'll find me. There you go.
Nice. And what about where you'll be able to find Tony Osmond?
Oh, yeah, it'll be on Big Cartel. So never on anything. Big Cartel, or go to Tribute Press. You'll find it there. But if you go, I'll probably put it up as a preview this week, and the digital copy will go live at the end of the week, I reckon. There you go.
Nice. Dan.
Nice. You can find me on that shit old Twitter. And he could read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
And you should, because it's fantastic.
Cheers.
And don't worry. When we hang up or we stop recording now, we're all going to go and give Dan a hug, a socially distant hug.
But I'm on VK now. That's where you got to go. Go to VK. VK is Russian Facebook. There's loads of people on there. But there's so much really great art on there. Oh, my God. There's illustrators I've never heard of. I'm suddenly addicted to and think are brilliant. Yeah.
I got some great feedback from a friend of the show, Tom Curry, about Vanguard this week, and I appreciate that. Oh,
nice. He's a good lad, isn't he?
He's a good lad.
Yeah. Skelly Bob.
Yeah, God, blimey, we owe him tenner.
He owes us tenner.
All right. Okay. Anyway, you can find me and my stuff on Instagram and social media at Jester Diablo, and you can find my comic Black on Instagram at Black the Comic. That's BLAK the Comic. So, go forth, read loads of comics. Have a great week. We hope you're all staying safe, being sensible, and okay.
Staying alert.
What
the fuck that means.
Yeah.
Make sure you're staying alert.
Yeah. Well, I'm always alert, because you never know who's about.
Yeah, you're like the in the Pink Panther movies when Kato attacks. You're always aware, aren't you?
Yeah. you are my Kato.
That's how the old coronavirus comes upon you, innit?
Yeah. But no, we hope wherever you are, mentally, physically, healthily, we hope you're okay. We love you. Thank you very much for listening to us as always. We do appreciate it, because we're desperate for attention. We're stuck in our bunkers. Jesus Christ. But we've got lots of comics to read, so we'll be fine. So thank you for listening from Dan, Tony and myself. Go forth, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Doesn't have to be the ones we mention. If you do read a cool comic, recommend it to someone else.
Put it on the Facebook group. What
we're in a group, we talk about it.
Yeah.
And after you do that, what should they always do, fellas?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Dan, you got to up your game, son.
We were synchronizing there.
That was almost right.
That was synchronized to you.
For us.
Oh, that's true. Good. That's true. That's true.
Bullying us into saying it every week.
I do not bully you. You just wait till I stop pressing record.
I've got a story for you when we stop pressing record.
Oh, well, I'll stop now. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Should I tell you that thing about the poster? It's off the alien poster.
Oh, right.
There's on the bottom, there's like a grid system. And I thought that was like the Geiger-esque like design.
Right.
But the designers of the poster didn't have any kind of pre-production stuff. They had to kind of just take it on a whim. So they're a load of naked bodies at the bottom.
All right.
What?
On the alien poster.
Is it just naked people?
There's naked people. They're laying in like in a crisscross pattern. You don't really see any kind of knobs and tits.
Oh, right. Well, I don't care.
Well, I was like, that's weird. I've looked at that poster for fucking years and I never ever saw that.
Normally, I've got like a radar for knobs and tits.
So you look at it again, you're like, oh, yeah.
Knobs and tits.
Knobs and tits.
Knobs and tits.